You're listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News Service. I'm Jesse Russell.
And I'm Sarah Turner.
It's day 12 of an indefinite hunger strike by Gary Nilsson, the president of the Communication Workers of America, Local 1365 in Andover, Massachusetts. Nilsson's union has shrunk from 3,000 to 300 members in 3 years. Nilsson is fasting to get a better financial package for 34 maintenance workers due to be laid off from Lucent Technologies this Friday. The North Shore Labor Council is asking area union workers to show their support by fasting for 24 hours. Nilsson vowed to continue drinking only fruit juice and water until he gets his members the severance package he feels they deserve.
A plan by an iron ore supplier to hire temporary workers during a labor dispute has steel workers fired up. Cleveland Cliffs Incorporated has announced in a letter that if the labor dispute is not resolved by July 31st and a strike does occur, non-regional workers will be used to keep its four Minnesota and Michigan mines running. Temporary workers haven't been used during labor disputes in the Iron Range mining industry for more than 30 years. The company says that the demand for taconite pellets is at an all-time high, but inventories are low, and if there is a disruption, it could cause vendors to look elsewhere. The union says the company is just trying to threaten the employees by using a classic union-busting technique.
Lights on Broadway could go dark as early as this week. Contract talks broke down between the Broadway Actors Union, Equity, and theater producers on Saturday. No further talks are scheduled with the producers' trade group, so now Equity is approaching individual producers and on Sunday reached a labor agreement with the producer of The Boy from Oz. This prevents any work stoppage for that musical, though a strike authorization for all other Broadway shows could come as early as this week.
Under a new program, postal workers who are determined to be permanently ill or injured could lose all of the benefits of their union contract. The program, called the Outplacement Initiative, would use government funding to send employees to work for private companies. When placed, the worker will lose union representation, have health benefits switched to the new employers, and their federal pension will be frozen without future earning potential. Currently being tested in Flushing, New York, the Postal Service expects to expand the program throughout the country if successful.
Here's today's Dow Bob Report. America is a land of equal opportunity, right? Well, if someone's lacking health insurance at retirement age, they're 43% more likely to die prematurely than their peers, according to a new study by Health Affairs. The report translates into more than 100,000 preventable deaths for people between the ages of 55 to 64, placing uninsurance as the third most common cause of death for this age group.
You've been listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News Service. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
You put in 30 years at the company. You got good pay, health care. Then they send you a job overseas. And under George Bush, the company actually gets a tax break for doing it. Now, Bush says we're in recovery. Then after a year, you finally land another job, and you wonder, is this what you worked your whole life for? We're not being led. We're being misled.
What's wrong with you people? Don't you know that the economy is humming? That our very own president has declared mission accomplished on his promise of prosperity? That the stock market is up by 40% over last year? That jobs are cropping up like crabgrass? That the bluebird of happiness is officially singing everywhere across our land? And that you should be grateful, for God's sake? Republican politicians, corporate economists, and the media barons are totally befuddled these days because their economic statistics tell them that the economy is in great shape. Yet you wretches, are still grumpy, even giving Bush the lowest marks of his presidency for his economic stewardship. George himself has gone into one of his high-pitched whines, chastising those who can't see the sunshine. He's sounding a whole lot like his daddy did back in 92. Like he's just another rich son of a Bush who is totally oblivious to the realities of America's workaday majority. He's looking at rosy economic indicators handed to him by his political operatives, rather than looking at such real-life pocketbook indicators as jobs that only pay poverty wages, gasoline topping $2 a gallon, milk at $4.43 a gallon, health care costs rising 3 times faster than wages, and 401ks being shrunk to 1ks. Also with their heads in the clouds are such media powers as the New York Times, which recently bemoaned the public's economic gloom, referring to it as a mood. A mood? Your job's being downsized or offshored. Your kids can't afford to go to college. Bush is trying to cut your Social Security benefits and raise your retirement age to 70. And they think you're moody? Meanwhile, a clueless Republican senator, Jim Talent of Missouri, blithely says that prosperity is everywhere, but, quote, it just takes a while longer for that to filter through to folks. This is Jim Hightower saying, filter this, Senator. We'll believe the economy is humming when we are.
38%.
46%.
42%.
I cut my payments in half.
How much can you cut your monthly student loan payments by refinancing with College Loan Corporation? To find out, just call 1-800-2-COLLEGE. You'll quickly be connected to an expert loan consultant who will answer your questions and tell you how you can cut your monthly payment by up to 50% by refinancing your federal student loans at rates as low as 2.63%. 1-800-2-COLLEGE. It's the smartest call you can make.
You know, out here in West Texas, it gets really hot, and it's a tough, dry heat.
Glenn Austell of Lubbock, Texas, talks about Gold Bond medicated powder.
When I'm working outside, my skin gets itchy and irritated. I guess you call it a heat rash or something like that. But Gold Bond relieves the itch and irritation. It gives me a cool, refreshing sensation. I'm telling you, once you've tried Gold Bond, you can't live without it.
Gold Bond medicated powder cools and soothes heat rash and irritated skin. Use it directed.
I mean, who wouldn't want to feel cool and refreshed?
Calling for a rapid and radical return to the old values that made America great, the values of democracy on which this country was founded, here's Tom Hartman.
Well, happy Monday, top of the day to you. Tom Hartman here with you. It's the 12th of July, 113 days until regime change here in the United States. Which reminds me, in 1,039 days since 9/11, 696 days since the anthrax killer guaranteed the passage of the Patriot Act, and in thanks, John Ashcroft has been sure to leave that boy loose. 613 days since we started our search for weapons of mass destruction, and 400 days since Valerie Plame was outed, since treason was committed by somebody in the White House. And we still don't know who. You know, there's this whole scandal thing. I'm not even sure scandal's the right word. There's this whole, you know, this bad intelligence led us to war. Now, first of all, I have to say, if I were one of the soldiers in Iraq, this has got to be devastating morale. This is one of the reasons, why countries don't do preemptive war. Unless the threat is so obvious and overwhelming that nobody doubts it. It's just incredible to me that the cons are continuing to go on these radio talk shows and TV talk shows. And France thought they had weapons of mass destruction. England thought they had. Y'all, Europe thought they had them. The UN thought they had them. Bill Clinton thought they had. Well, okay. Bill Clinton thought they had them in the 90s. He was right because Don Rumsfeld went over and sold them to him. Made sure it happened during the Reagan administration. We supplied Saddam. I mean, you know, right the week after Saddam gassed the Kurds in Halabja, Donald Rumsfeld flies over there and shakes his hand and says, "We're with you. You're our ally." And we continue to provide him with weapons and satellite intelligence for his war with Iran. Keep in mind, the gassing of the Kurds wasn't because the Kurds were bad guys. They were in the way. They were between him and the Iranian army. Which is not, of course, to defend Saddam. But the point is that many people may have thought there were weapons of mass destruction, but they didn't go to war based on it, number one. And number two, a lot of them actually didn't think there were weapons there. By the time Hans Blix had made his report a week before George W. decided he was going to go to war. The majority of the world was coming to the conclusion that in all probability Saddam did not represent a threat to the world. Well, okay, the cons are technically right when they say, well, all those countries thought he had him. Yeah, a year earlier. But by the time Blix had done a fair number of inspections over there, everybody was getting very skeptical. Except for, of course, W. Here's my question. According to, you know, see, there's this huge blame game. I predicted this 2 weeks ago when we knew when the report was coming out and when Tenet was leaving and all that. I told you so, that George W., that the Bush administration would basically try to lay the blame for this whole debacle on George Tenet and the CIA. And sure enough, the part of the Senate Intelligence Committee report that deals with things like Doug Feith setting up the Office of Special Plans in the Defense Department. Keep in mind, the Defense Secretary, Donald Rumsfeld, controls 80% of the total intelligence budget of the United States. George Tenet, as head of the CIA, only controlled between 10 and 15% of the intelligence budget of the United States. Don Rumsfeld is the guy who had the power. The real power. And within the Defense Department, he sets up his own special intelligence office, the Office of Special Plans, to gather intelligence and feed it to the White House. And that will not be discussed until after the elections. Because why? Well, because the Republicans control the Senate. This is very simple. So anyhow, here's my question. George W., according to Bob Woodward, and not only have the Republicans not disputed this, but on the RNC website, Republican National Committee, that group that's headed up by the former Enron lobbyist, who was fired by Enron, by the way, Ed Gillespie, over on the RNC website, they tell you to go buy Woodward's book. Okay. And in that book, in Woodward's new book about George W. and the war in Iraq, he's got this scene where Tenet comes in and he's got W. sitting there and he does his song and dance about here's the weapons and here's the intelligence and here's the satellites and here's what this, that, and the other thing. He does this whole little song and dance. When he's all done, W. says something to the effect of, is that all you've got? I mean, you know, this looks like promising, but I'm not sure that the American people are ready to buy this, much less me. I'm paraphrasing. And according to Woodward, Tenet stands up, raises his hands in the air, and says, Mr. President, it's a slam dunk. Now, that story has been retold 1,000 times in the media. And the question it raises in my mind is, why didn't the President of the United States at that point say, okay, George, you say it's a slam dunk, prove it to me. I mean, just think about it for a minute. If you were President of the United States and the head of your intelligence agency came to you and gave you a report that said that another nation represented a threat, and the report was so weak and so thin that your response was, you know, I'm not sure the average person's going to believe this, and I'm not sure I do either. And the head of that intelligence agency said, don't worry, it's a slam dunk. Would you just at that point say, oh, well, in that case, let's go off to war. Let's go kill, 20, 30, 40,000 Iraqi civilians. Let's even try to do it in the name of 9/11 when we lost 3,000 civilians. And let's, allow 800 or more of our young men and women to die, over 1,000 coalition soldiers, 16,000 of our soldiers to lose arms, legs, eyes, ears. Yeah, let's do that just because you said it's a slam dunk. That's good enough for me. If you were president of the United States, would you be that stupid? Would you be that incompetent? Now, this is not to say that I'm calling George Bush, George W. Bush, stupid or incompetent. What I'm saying is, W., Mr. President, how about answering the question? Why is it that when you looked at that intelligence and you said, according to Woodward, and you have not only not disputed this, you're telling people to read the book, and you said, according to Woodward, you know, this doesn't make it. And Tennant said, oh, don't worry, it's a slam dunk. Why did you stop asking questions at that point? Is it because you're incompetent? Is it because you're stupid? Frankly, I don't think so. Is it because you had already decided, before you were even elected, that if you got in as president of the United States, looking back at Roosevelt's record during World War II, Nixon during the Vietnam War, Wilson during World War I, Lincoln during the Civil War, knowing that when the country is at war, the Americans tend to rally around the president, that you wanted to have a good and significant war, and that you were not going to make the mistake that your father made when he pushed Saddam out of Kuwait, of resolving the thing in a short enough period of time. What was it, a 100-hour war? George W. thought that was very elegant. Exactly 100 hours. Resolving it in a short enough period of time that by the time the election came around, people had forgotten about your tactical brilliance. Now, you'd make sure this thing would drag out. I'm a war president, he said to Diane Sawyer. So, I think that this administration has, I don't think it, I know it, and you know it. You know it as well as I do. And what's amazing is that our soldiers are, they're way ahead of the American people in asking these questions, from everything that I can tell, from talking to people who are over there, talking to people who have relatives over there, reading the blogs and the websites. Our soldiers are saying, hey, why didn't you bother to check the intelligence? Why didn't you double check? When Tennant made the presentation to you and you said, this isn't good enough, and he said, don't worry, it's a slam dunk, why didn't you say, come on, prove it to me, buddy? I mean, I'm over here. My best friend just died in a landmine accident, or a booby trap, or a roadside bomb, or a rocket-propelled grenade. Why didn't you bother to do your damn homework, George? And now we find it went even farther than that. In a classified national intelligence estimate, this from the Los Angeles Times, an article about how the National Intelligence Estimate, it's called the NIE, the National Intelligence Estimate, was changed. The original draft that the president saw was full of words like, we're not sure, we think, maybe, according to this per... And the final draft that got shown to the Senate, people like John Kerry and John Edwards and Dianne Feinstein and Jay Rockefeller, the final draft had all those qualifiers stripped out of it, and we still don't know who did it. It's like Rosemary Woods with her 19-second pause and her contortion. We still don't know who did it. 1-866-889-8894, our telephone number. Tom Hartman here with you. Truth and common sense in broadcasting. Finally, yes.
I guess I better let the dog in.
Like the small dog that rules the house, Small Dog Electronics is the small computer company that really rules when it comes to customer service. Small Dog Electronics is your authorized Apple reseller in Wakefield, Vermont. Sure, you can buy your computer out of a catalog, but how do you know you're really getting what you want or what you need? At Small Dog, they don't work on commission. Their only motivation is making sure you're a happy customer. Put your business on the leading edge with the world's fastest computer, the new Macintosh G5. You'll finish the job ahead of the pack, and automatic security updates lock out viruses. That's speed and dependability that will keep you focused on your customers instead of sitting on hold with tech support.
I guess you want to get on the couch, huh?
Like the small dog who everybody makes room for, Small Dog Electronics is big on customer service. Small Dog Electronics. Check them out on the web at smalldog.com or at their showroom on Route 100 in Waitsfield.
No way. You're not getting on the bed.
Are George Bush's policies getting you down? Have you had enough of Bush's messianic militarism? Does John Ashcroft's assault on the Bill of Rights scare you? Do you believe that Dick Cheney had his conscience surgically removed 3 decades ago? Are you angry at the Iraq fiasco that was the brainchild of Deputy Secretary of Defense Paul out of his wits? Well, then subscribe to the Progressive magazine. You'll get the ins of Barbara Ehrenreich, the inspiration of Howard Zinn, and the mirth of Molly Ivins, Will Durst, and Kate Clinton. They'll help you survive this dark age. And check this out. You can subscribe today for only $12 for 12 monthly issues. Simply get on the web and go to www.progressive.org or call 1-800-827-0555 and mention offer radio. That's 1-800-827-0555 and mention the radio offer from the Tom Hartman program. That's the Progressive. It's your antidote to reactionary policies.
At last, there's a positive focus on a condition that affects millions. Read The Edison Gene, ADHD and the Gift of the Hunter Child by Tom Hartman, best-selling author of Attention Deficit Disorder, A Different Perception. John Rady, author of User's Guide to the Brain, says this about the Edison Gene.
Once again, with tireless scholarship and a bit of poetry, Tom Hartman helps take us to the edge of knowing ourselves, our brains, and our world.
The Edison Gene, available in bookstores everywhere.
Here's today's Dow Bob Report. 20% of Iraq veterans who were in at least 5 firefights are suffering from post-traumatic stress disorder, according to a new study by the New England Journal of Medicine. PTSD is debilitating, causing headaches, sleeplessness, hypervigilance, and depression. The disorder has plagued a total of 12.6% of soldiers returning from Iraq, and the chances of suffering from it only increases with the amount of time spent in combat zones.
How can contemporary America possibly compare with 1933 Germany? Find out in Tom Hartman's brand new fully illustrated book, We the People, A Call to Take Back America. Through Tom's concise political analysis and Neil Cohn's vibrant illustrations, you'll observe an unsettling, if not shocking, perspective of America. You'll also hear what the founders of this country did to control corporate power. You'll be invited to consider how the American political system can be made more democratic, as well as comprehend a project for the new American century's vision for America. Here's what syndicated cartoonist Ted Rawl said after reading We the People.
An ambitious effort to explain everything that's wrong in America, how things got this way, and what should be done about it. We the People is the product of a brilliant and principled thinker.
We the People, A Call to Take Back America by Tom Hartman, available in bookstores everywhere.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
Oh, I am just a student, sir, and only want to learn. But it's hard to read through the rising smoke from the books that you like to burn. So I'd like to make a promise, and I'd like to make a vow, that when I've got something to say, sir, I'm going to say it now.
And welcome back. 24 and a half minutes past the hour. Tom Hartman here with you. The Los Angeles Times reports today, in a classified national intelligence estimate prepared before the Iraq War, the CIA hedged its judgments about Saddam Hussein and weapons of mass destruction, pointing up the limits of its knowledge. But in the unclassified version of the National Intelligence Estimate, the so-called white paper cited by the Bush administration making its case for war, this is from the article by Mark Mazzetti, key revisions were made to CIA document. But in the unclassified version, those carefully qualified conclusions were turned into blunt assertions of fact. This according to the Senate Intelligence Committee's report. The repeated elimination of qualifying language and dissenting assessments of some of the government's most knowledgeable experts gave the public an inaccurate impression of what the U.S. intelligence community believed about the threats Hussein posed to the United States, the committee said. Yes, indeed. 1-866-889-8894, our telephone number. Dan in Pennsylvania is on the line. Hey, Dan, what's up?
Can you hear me?
I certainly can. You are live and on the air.
Thank you. First, I'd like to thank you for the opportunity to talk to you and your audience. I served in the Gulf. Most recently, I was there in Kuwait for a few weeks. Are you still there?
I am, and so are you.
Okay, I'm having a little bit of problem with the cell. I pulled over, and I think I've got a pretty good signal. In any case, I'll just continue here. I was in Iraq, and I want your listeners to understand what the soldiers out there believe they're doing, and why it's so important that we stay there and finish that job, and why it was so important that we went there in the first place.
Okay.
We have a problem, obviously, with terrorism, as evidenced by Al-Qaeda and some of these other groups that are out there. And the invasion into Afghanistan during freedom was a perfect short-term fix to an immediate problem. And it was obvious, you know, on its face that we had to get in there and clean out Al-Qaeda and take care of that problem in Afghanistan. But,
well, let me ask you this, Dan. When the Taliban offered to deliver Osama bin Laden to us and we turned them down, wouldn't that have been just fine?
I mean, I don't know that would have made a complete difference. It would have been nice to have had him.
If they gave us bin Laden and then we bombed the camps and shut them down, I mean,
well,
you know.
When we bombed Tarnak Farms and those other camps in Afghanistan, we did damage them, but we didn't shut them down because their camps are fairly crude, and it doesn't take a lot to bring them back up and running, even if a particular site is destroyed.
No, but
let me get on with my larger point. Yes,
okay.
It would have been good for us to have gotten Osama bin Laden and Mohammed Atef and Ayman al-Zawahiri and those other people as soon as possible. But I don't think it would have made al-Qaeda and the Islamic fundamentalist problem that we have go away in toto. Now, we had to get in there and we had to clean out al-Qaeda and we had to get in there and put some pressure on them, try and decapitate that leadership and do away with as many of the soldiers, the foot soldiers, as we can. But the bigger problem is the Middle East region. And what you have is a wellspring of foot soldiers coming up out of that Middle East region for a lot of reasons. One, their governments are so moribund and their economies are so moribund and so corrupt that a lot of these guys, they have educations, degrees, doctorates, masters in engineering and things, and they have no hope and no future there in those countries. So they pour into the madrasas and they pour into these other places where they're ripe fruit for these political extremists and these religious extremists to go ahead and pick. Now, the reason, and this is evidenced by the morale. I don't know whether you've seen the morale reports from the soldiers that are serving in Iraq, and it's tough duty there, but the morale is very, very high because a lot of the soldiers there, most of the soldiers there, at least in my experience, understand why we're there. We are there to try and change that region, and Iraq is the perfect place to do that.
If okay, Dan, we've got to take a break here. Dan, I'm going to ask if you can you hold on?
Sure.
Okay, I'm going to ask you to hold on during the break, and we'll continue this discussion. It's the Tom Hartman Radio Program, 29 minutes past the hour. Talk radio for the rest of us. We'll be right back. For more than 27 years, the Progressive magazine In These Times has provided groundbreaking coverage of movements for social, environmental, and economic justice. Author and broadcast personality Studs Terkel calls In These Times his bi-weekly tonic. In These Times features award-winning reporting and analysis of national and international news. Find In These Times on your newsstand or visit us online at www.inthesetimes.com or call 1-800-827-0270. 1-800-827-0270.
pop and not so pop culture, democracy, and the news of the day. This is the Tom Hartman Program.
You're listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News Service. I'm Jesse Russell.
And I'm Sarah Turner.
It's day 12 of an indefinite hunger strike by Gary Nilsson, the president of the Communication Workers of America, Local 1365 in Andover, Massachusetts. Nilsson's union has shrunk from 3,000 to 300 members in 3 years. Nilsson is fasting to get a better financial package for 34 maintenance workers due to be laid off from Lucent Technologies this Friday. The North Shore Labor Council is asking area union workers to show their support by fasting for 24 hours. Nilsson vowed to continue drinking only fruit juice and water until he gets his members the severance package he feels they deserve.
A plan by an iron ore supplier to hire temporary workers during a labor dispute has steelworkers fired up. Cleveland Cliffs Incorporated has announced in a letter that if the labor dispute is not resolved by July 31st and a strike does occur, non-regional workers will be used to keep its four Minnesota and Michigan mines running. Temporary workers haven't been used during labor disputes in the Iron Range mining industry for more than 30 years. The company says that the demand for taconite pellets is at an all-time high, but inventories are low, and if there is a disruption, it could cause vendors to look elsewhere. The union says the company is just trying to threaten the employees by using a classic union-busting technique.
Lights on Broadway could go dark as early as this week. Contract talks broke down between the Broadway Actors Union, Equity, and theater producers on Saturday. No further talks are scheduled with the producers' trade group, so now Equity is approaching individual producers and on Sunday reached a labor agreement with the producer of The Boy from Oz. This prevents any work stoppage for that musical, though a strike authorization for all other Broadway shows could come as early as this week.
Under a new program, postal workers who are determined to be permanently ill or injured could lose all of the benefits of their union contract. The program, called the Outplacement Initiative, would use government funding to send employees to work for private companies. When placed, the worker will lose union representation, have health benefits switched to the new employers, and their federal pension will be frozen without future earning potential. Currently being tested in Flushing, New York, the Postal Service expects to expand the program throughout the country if successful.
Here's today's Dow Bob Report.
America is a land of equal opportunity, right? Well, if someone's lacking health insurance at retirement age, they're 43% more likely to die prematurely than their peers, according to a new study by Health Affairs. The report translates into more than 100,000 preventable deaths for people between the ages of 55 to 64, placing uninsurance as the third most common cause of death for this age group. .org.
This is the Democracy Zone with Tom Hartman.
And welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you, 26 and a half minutes before the hour. We were talking with Dan from Pennsylvania about his notions about why we're in Iraq and why it's so...
The Middle East. You have Iraq, which is right in the heart of it, and we know we have a region with a problem. And so Iraq is the perfect place to go to try and do something for the region. And so if we can get a democracy, and I'm not talking about a Jeffersonian democracy or anything else, it's going to have to be some sort of Iraqi or Arab democracy to work in there. That there's more, you know, the mullahs and the dictators in Iran to the east, and the dictators in Syria and the you know, some of those other places where the and in Saudi Arabia and even in Kuwait to some extent, where there's very little representative government and the economies are more of an, there's going to be a wellspring in that whole region caused by the fact that we could get a democracy up and running in Iraq. Now, those people, those dictators can control the internet content, they can control the media, they can control everything. There's one thing they can't control, and they've never been able to, and they never will be able to, and that's the borders. And that's one of the problems we're having over there right now is the border control. But if we can make it work in Iraq, and
Actually, Saddam had
talking traffic between Syria and Iraq and between Iran and Iraq and those places. Those people are going to start to ask their governments hard questions like, hey, you know, they have a functioning democracy over there, whatever sort it works out to be, and they have a market-based economy, and they're doing well, and their people, their young men are working, and they're using their educations. And that is the kind – now, this is a long-term strategy. Make no mistake about it. President Bush has taken a great gamble here.
Dan, I absolutely understand your point. And what you are saying is what the Project for New American Century was saying back in 1998 when Jeb Bush and Pearl and Wolfowitz and Feith and Dick Cheney signed a letter to Bill Clinton saying, please invade Iraq right now. It's the exact rationalization that they gave. But what number one, what makes you think that that's going to work? And number two, actually, let's start with number two first. Who was it who hit us on 9/11?
Well, it was Islamic fundamentalism.
Where did they come from?
And a hopeless base.
No. These were not hopeless people. Most of the guys in those airplanes were upper middle class. A couple of them were worth millions. Where did those guys come from? They came from Saudi Arabia and Yemen.
Sure.
Okay.
Look, Tom, I'm not going to say that. Look, and there's even been some terrorist organizations in the West.
Okay, so if the wellspring of all this stuff,
rich kids,
Dan, hang on just a second here. Dan, hang on just a second here. I let you have your say. At least let's have a conversation.
I
agree with you that the problem, that there's a very real problem frankly, from the Wahhabists. You know, this radical sect of Islam. It's the Islamic equivalent of Jerry Falwell, you know, even more toxic than Jerry Falwell. It's the Islamic equivalent of the people in Salem, Massachusetts in 1670. And that those folks are spreading a thought virus across the Middle East that is very destructive. And they're saying, okay, your government is run by a dictator. Your economy is not working. You don't have a decent job. The whole world is doing better than you are. And the solution is to become like us, to become like, you know, the Salem witch trial folks. You know, let's clamp down on the women. Let's, you know, take it out. And they really weren't getting traction. You had Osama bin Laden. Seriously, Iraq, for example, was a secular state. Iraq was a secular state. Iraq had not suffered any terrorist attacks from Wahhabists. Saddam Hussein was running a secular state.
Dictatorship.
Absolutely.
I mean,
absolutely.
There was very little terrorism.
Let me finish my point. Absolutely. Let me finish my point.
You can't argue that that was a productive place for people to live and enjoy their lives.
I'm not trying to argue that. I'm talking about who attacked us. I'm talking about what is the United States, you know, interest. What's our dog in this fight?
That's what I was trying to get at. Our interests are in drying up the source of all of those foot soldiers. I'm not going to argue with you, Tom. There were some of those folks in those planes on 9/11 that were rich Saudis and other, you know, and you could always concentrate a handful of guys like that.
The source of this is not a place. It's a form of thinking. Don't we agree on that?
What's that? Now you broke up. I'm sorry. I'm on the cell.
The source of this problem is not a place. It's a way of thinking.
It is a way of thinking, but what it is you have fruit being produced that's ready to be converted from fruit into this poisoned wine way of thinking. And
yeah,
I believe
absolutely
that if the region is changed with some form of Arabic-based democracy and there's some market economies in there and these young men have jobs and futures, that fruit being converted into that poison wine would change into some very, very comfortable Merlot or something.
You know, Dan, I totally agree with you. I just don't think that a war is the way to do it.
How else are you going to go in there and affect that when you can't even get the internet in there? You can't get, you know.
But actually, those things are happening. Look at Al Jazeera. Al Jazeera is the first television network completely independent of a state that has ever happened in the Middle East.
Yeah, but look at its message.
No, I suggest that you go see the movie Control Room. Its message is actually making the Arab dictators squirm a lot more than it's making us squirm.
Well, I wanted to let you know how the soldiers think about this.
Okay.
And why we feel that mission is important. And to go to your second question, or I guess your first question.
Well, I never finished making my point, Dan.
What makes us think it's going to work? Look, no one knew you know, could see into a crystal ball and know that we were going to defeat Japan and Germany in the Second World War. But because we're a good and decent group of people here in this country, I believe that we will succeed in this. And as opposed to having a dictator-based emperor system like they had in Japan prior to the Second World War, and the same kind of thing in Germany. Now those places are functioning democracies.
Yeah,
some of the
and you have just
world, and that was done with a war.
Yeah, you have just made my point perfectly, Dan. Now let me lay this thing out here. And the problem here is this thought virus. We had this group, Osama bin Laden, who was like the super pious guy. His own family is in awe of how pious he is, and you know, he's a real true believer in this stuff, the Wahhabism, this super right-wing sect of Islam. And he goes off to Afghanistan, and with funding from Ronald Reagan, he starts fighting against the Russians. And he drags the Russians into this morass over about a 15-year period and bloodies their nose, and eventually, with our funding and our support and our training, eventually throws the Russians out of Afghanistan. Starts growing poppies, starts exporting opium, you know, the heroin crop is huge, all this kind of stuff. And so he's like, you know, proud of himself. Hey, look what I did. I got this. And now he wants to grow his Islamic revolution. He wants more people to believe the way he does. And so, but nobody's taking him seriously. The rest of the Arab world is not going Wahhabist. In fact, within Saudi Arabia, Wahhabism is actually on the decline. Because the Saudis are seeing these people as right-wing crackpots. So he says, okay, I've got to get some attention. I got to prove to the world that I really am that he really is the new Messiah, that he really is the reincarnation of the Prophet Muhammad. I mean, not literally, but close to it, you know, the Saladin, let's say. And so he starts attacking us. And we respond to him as if he's a criminal. You know, we go after his people. We try to assassinate him. You know, Clinton, you know, unsuccessfully. I'm not trying to defend Bill Clinton here, but the point is that basically he didn't get the publicity that he wanted. He didn't get the rallying around effect. He didn't get the whole Arab world going, hey, that poor guy, we need to rally around him.
Okay,
and even when we went into Afghanistan, he expected. And there's a, you know, ample evidence of this, that when we went into Afghanistan, he expected that we were going to have the same problem the Russians did, that it was going to be a 10 or 15 year war and that he'd eventually win. And
they weren't ready for how we did that.
That's right. He totally miscalculated and he fled over to Pakistan. And then, and at that point, if we had stopped at that point, we probably, you know, there probably would not have been any new recruits for Wahhabism, for bin Laden's particular philosophy.
I don't know about
it's
that.
His thought virus would not have spread.
Have you been to Pakistan? Have you been to Pakistan?
No, but I've been to India and I've been in the region and I've been to a lot of Middle Eastern countries.
You can look around. If you go into Pakistan, there is more Osama bin Laden T-shirts and books and posters on the walls everywhere.
Oh, I know.
And the kids are wearing the T-shirts.
I know, and
it's all since
we invaded Iraq. This is my point, Dan. When we went into Iraq, which had nothing to do with Osama bin Laden, nothing to do with Wahhabism.
But it does.
In fact, no, they were the enemies of Wahhabism.
No, but it does.
It was a secular society.
With taking away the wellspring of where his foot soldiers come from.
No, it's none of his foot. There were no Iraqi foot soldiers
in
Osama's army.
I'm talking about the region. I'm talking about making a change in that region and eliminating where he gets his massive numbers of foot soldiers from.
No. You're hopelessly overgeneralizing. I'm sorry.
I'm not. I'm just saying.
Yes, you are.
This is a long-term
the
strategy.
The problem is Saudi.
25 years.
That's why the stupidest way to do it is to go in and kill 30,000 civilians.
Well, I will tell you this: I was on the ground over there during the shooting phase of the conventional war, and I did see on one or two very limited occasions where I thought we used a heavy hand. But as our targeting has become more precise and our information better. There's not another military in the world that could have gone in there and done what we did.
Then why are they killing us now?
Well,
yeah.
This conversation's starting to range far and wide. I could go into that.
Yeah. I'm going to stop it. I'm going to stop it right now, Dan, because we I got to move along. We got a couple of other callers here, and we're running out of time.
Tom.
You're welcome.
Your time.
Call back anytime. Call back anytime.
Discussion.
Yeah, thanks, Dan. I appreciate it when people disagree with me. I do. I truly do. Kevin in Tampa's on the line. Hey, Kevin, what's up?
Hey, Tom, how you doing?
I'm great. What's up?
about Dan. I wanted to get into his thing about the soldiers.
Oh, the one point that I want to make, Kevin, by the way, thank you for reminding me. Dan mentioned Germany and Japan, and this is the key to the whole thing. I've been to both Germany and Japan. I have friends who are Japanese, and I have friends who are Germans, and I have friends who are Germans who are sufficiently old that two of my friends actually served in Hitler's army. A good friend of mine who we've had on this show, Armin Lehmann, who was Hitler's personal courier in the Führer bunker. He was 16 years old. He was in the Hitler Youth, wrote a book about it called Hitler's Courier. You talk to these guys, and what's very clear to them is that Hitler had infected many of his people, particularly his true believers, many of the soldiers, with a thought virus, just like Osama was. They really believed they were going to create 1,000 years of peace. And when we popped the bubble of that by showing them the horrors of the Holocaust, they recoiled with such horror that when the Americans went in to occupy Germany after World War II, not one American from VE Day, Victory in Europe Day, until today, not one American has died as a result in Germany of hostile fire. The exact same thing, that is, German troops or leftovers or holdovers or insurgents or whatever fire, not one. Same thing in Japan. Not one soldier, not one American. My father was in the occupation in Japan after World War II. He was among the soldiers who went in there to secure Japan after they surrendered. Not one American soldier from 1944 until today has died in Japan as a result of insurrections. And why is that? Because they realized that their emperor and Tojo had gone insane. They had practiced this cult of worshiping the emperor. He was the descendant of the sun. He was the sun god. And therefore, they die in these kamikaze planes and all this. And they realized that it was a mental illness. They were nuts. That was wrong. When we went into Iraq, the Iraqi people didn't suddenly slap their foreheads and go, "Oh my God, we've been wrong. We've been building weapons of mass destruction, and we've been attacking our neighbors, and we've been declaring a war on the..." No, they didn't, because they hadn't been. They had been defeated in the war with Iran. They had been defeated in the war with Kuwait. They'd been under sanctions for 10 years. Their country was falling apart. They knew they had a tin horn dictator, but that's not a crime in their minds worthy of being punished for. And so the people of Iraq are not saying, "Gee, thank you very much for waking us up from the nightmare of this insanity that we were a part of." Now, I can see maybe if we had invaded Saudi Arabia that the Saudi people might say, "Hey, thanks for getting the Wahhabists off our backs." I frankly think that's even, I'm skeptical about that. But there is absolutely no parallel between what we are doing right now and what happened in World War II. And the evidence is so clear that not a single soldier has died in either Germany or Japan since then. Thanks for letting me make that rant, Kevin. Your point.
No problem. Before I get to the thing about the troops real fast, two statements of facts that Dan needs to know. He was talking about borders being sealed.
Right.
Yesterday, Syria agreed with Alawi to seal the Syrian border.
Yeah, well,
we'll see if
Saddam
works,
Saddam had pretty good control over his borders, and that's one of the things that one of the big criticisms by General Anthony Zinni of George Bush is that when we went in, we did not put soldiers in place to seal those borders, and we dissolved the Iraqi military, which was patrolling those borders.
Yeah, we can see in the weeks ahead what happens between Syria and Iraq.
Yeah.
The second thing he said was that when we were in the shooting stage, what is this now?
Right.
24 American soldiers were killed in the last 7 days.
I know your son is over there, too.
Yeah, and that was the point. He said that the soldiers over, that's why I called, the soldiers over there understood George Bush and they supported this. Well, I agree with him that the soldiers understood George Bush. My son is in a unit that has over 300 people. They're a reserve unit out of Perrine, Florida, which is a suburb of Miami. He told me many times, they are 100% voting against Bush, which means they're voting for Kerry. And I know several other people who are military people, both who have served over there and have not served over there, and every single one of them has told me that they are voting against.
Do you own a computer? Is your credit less than perfect? If you have a checking account and can afford a weekly payment of $29.95 for just 12 months, then you are already approved for a brand new IBM, Dell, eMachine, or other name brand computer guaranteed. You heard right. Bad credit? No credit? No problem. There is no credit check, so you will not be turned down. If you have a checking account and can afford a weekly payment of $29.95 for just 12 months, you are approved for your brand new name brand computer. Just call 800-588-0596. Freedom Frog Funding says you are approved. So give us a call today at 800-588-0596 to have your brand new computer shipped right to you. And if you act now, we'll add a $200 upgrade and a one-year warranty for free. You heard right. We will upgrade your computer and throw in a warranty absolutely free. So don't wait. Let Freedom Frog Funding send you the computer of your dreams today. Call 800-588-0596. That number is 800-588-0596.
Hi, this is Tom Hartman. Join me this October as we explore Greece, the ancient birthplace of democracy. When the Founding Fathers were searching for the best and fairest form of government, they studied the models of Athenian democracy. We'll explore together this part of the ancient world where the ideas that today animate modern democracy were first worked out. This journey is set on the shore of the sparkling Mediterranean Sea with the sacred mountains of Crete behind us. We'll visit the ancient site of Gortian, famous for the Law Code of Gortian, large 6th century BC tablets of stone built into a wall and one of the first examples of laws ever written down, and now the oldest still in existence. I'll teach workshops at the two most important sites in all of Crete, Knossos and Phaistos, plus more. At Knossos, we'll experience the main ceremonial center and the palace of King Minos. For information on how you can join us on this trip of a lifetime, visit www.tomhartman.com or call 1-800-234-TOUR. That's 1-800-234-TOUR, T-O-U-R.
Tom Hartman will be joining the exceptional faculty of The Great Rethinking, The Prophets Oxford, taking place the weekend of September 10th through 12th at Oxford University, England. You are invited to join Tom Hartman in Oxford, along with other leading visionaries, including Vandana Shiva, Helen Caldicott, and Rupert Sheldrake, among others, to rethink and reshape our collective future. The Great Rethinking Oxford premise is that this tumultuous time in our human history may be crafted into the birthing of something truly new. And you can play your part in shaping this new worldview by joining Tom Hartman September 10th through 12th. To find out how, go to the website greatmystery.org. That's greatmystery.org. Together, we will make a difference.
With the Workers' Independent News Service, I'm Sarah Turner bringing you today's feature story. In June, more than 400 people in Southern California were rounded up by Border Patrol agents and deported to Mexico. The raids had a chilling effect throughout the state's immigrant communities. Vinny Lombardo files this report.
Each day, hundreds gathered in the early morning and marched for 10 miles along the frontage roads of U.S. Highway 101, stopping to rally when workers were spotted in the nearby fields.
Workers that have been working in these fields haven't had raises in 10 years. And why did they give them a raise 10 years ago? Because the union was here organizing.
Castellanos points out that nearly 80% of California farm workers are undocumented. This leads to farm workers and other Latinos being questioned or arrested because of their skin color. U.S. Congressman Sam Farr disagrees. He says the rumors of Border Patrol raids are baseless.
The enforcement will be looking for a specific individual by name and not profiling people by race.
Efren Barajas is vice president of the UFW.
The communities are afraid. They hear about the migra being around. So these marches are serving the purpose of taking care of that concern.
In January, President Bush drafted a new program that would grant temporary legal status to undocumented workers if he or she finds a willing employer. The temporary visas expire after 3 years. If the employment ends early, the person must leave the U.S. Senate Bill 1645, aka the Ag Jobs Bill, would allow undocumented workers to permanently stay in the U.S. by continuing to work in agriculture. Yadira Ramirez has had family members deported to Mexico in the past.
We are not pieces of trash that you could just trash around and work like machinery.
The Ag Jobs Bill is expected to come up for a vote in the Senate later this week. In Santa Cruz, California, I'm Vinny Lombardo for the Workers' Independent News Service.
Fearlessly exploring the truth of the day, here's Tom Hartman.
of my life. 24 and there's so much more. Live alone in a paradise that makes me think of two.
And welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you. 4.5 minutes before the hour. You know, the point of this is just, it is so clear and so straightforward in my mind that you go crashing into an area and kill thousands of people to take out a dictator, and then you occupy a country, it's infrastructure harmed by years of sanctions, and you expect people to say, oh, you know, we're so grateful. And you wonder why they're shooting at us. Frankly, I think that a lot of Iraqis probably are grateful, but there's a much larger issue here. Shannon in Minnesota is on the line. Hey, Shannon, what are your thoughts on this?
I just like to call in response to Dan. The more I listen to you, the more I start to realize how much sense you make about that whole conservative religion. Seems to me like these guys who are continuing to defend this invasion into Iraq are working under some sort of religious assumption that we're going to be able to go in there and do a domino effect type of thing.
Yeah.
And make the whole region just happy and hunky-dory.
Well, it's the same reason that we were in Vietnam. You know, if we can just get a good toehold on the region. I mean, people forget that that when Saddam Hussein declared war on us in the late 90s, and it was published, his statement of jihad was published in the New York Times, his reason was because we had soldiers in Saudi Arabia defiling Holy Land. And now we've got soldiers in Iraq. You think that that's going to cause them to say, oh, gee, it's just fine?
Yeah, well, God bless Dan, I guess. You know, I hope he figures it out eventually. But I don't know what soldiers he's been talking to, because I just got out of the Army. My entire unit went to Iraq. Half of them went at the beginning of the war. Half of them were deployed a year afterward. And the vast majority of these guys have extremely low morale. And they don't know why they're there. They really don't.
Yeah.
And, I talk to soldiers all the time. I get maybe, 2 out of 10 who are actually interested in, or who actually believe we're doing something well. They all believe we're trying to do something well, but
yeah.
This
is the whole mission creep thing, Shannon. I mean, it started out, we've got to go over there because of weapons of mass destruction. They're a clear and present danger. There's a mushroom cloud coming. That was the first reason. And then, when that became, obvious, that wasn't, well, we needed to take out a terrible guy. Well, there's terrible guys all over the world. If we're going to start taking them out, we got a big job. And now it's, well, we've got to establish a presence in the Middle East. And if you look at the last time we established a presence in the Middle East in 91, when we put bases in Saudi Arabia, what was the result? It led to bin Laden. It's crazy. Shannon, thanks for the call. Great to hear from you. I appreciate it. 1-866-889-8894, our telephone number. Tom Hartman here with you, defending America from the conservative weapons of mass deception.
You've been listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information.
The Founding Fathers thought they'd stop corporations from ever overthrowing elected government. Little did they know that 200 years later, democracy would be stolen and twisted in the name of so-called conservative values. Hi, this is Tom Hartman. The Founders of America fought the Revolutionary War against the excessive corporate power of the East India Company, and presidents from Jefferson to Eisenhower warned us that extremely big businesses could destroy democracy. You'll find this extraordinary American story in my book, Unequal Protection: The Rise of Corporate Dominance and the Theft of Human Rights. It starts with the Boston Tea Party and ends with the rampant corruption of the Bush administration. It tells the dramatic story of how corporations hijacked the Bill of Rights, setting the stage for the CEO takeover of America. And it shows how we can take America back, and tells the stories of Americans from Pennsylvania to California who are doing just that right now.
Unequal Protection is available in bookstores nationwide, and you can read several chapters online at unequalprotection.com. That's Unequal Protection.
Pop and not-so-pop culture, democracy, and the news of the day. This is the Tom Hartman Program.
You're listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News Service. I'm Jesse Russell.
And I'm Sarah Turner.
It's day 12 of an indefinite hunger strike by Gary Nilsson, the president of the Communication Workers of America, Local 1365 in Andover, Massachusetts. Nilsson's union has shrunk from 3,000 to 300 members in 3 years. Nilsson is fasting to get a better financial package for 34 maintenance workers due to be laid off from Lucent Technologies this Friday. The North Shore Labor Council is asking area union workers to show their support by fasting for 24 hours. Nilsson vowed to continue drinking only fruit juice and water until he gets his members the severance package he feels they deserve.
A plan by an iron ore supplier to hire temporary workers during a labor dispute has steel workers fired up. Cleveland Cliffs Incorporated has announced in a letter that if the labor dispute is not resolved by July 31st and a strike does occur, non-regional workers will be used to keep its four Minnesota and Michigan mines running. Temporary workers haven't been used during labor disputes in the Iron Range mining industry for more than 30 years. The company says that the demand for taconite pellets is at an all-time high, but inventories are low, and if there is a disruption, it could cause vendors to look elsewhere. The union says the company is just trying to threaten the employees by using a classic union-busting technique.
Lights on Broadway could go dark as early as this week. Contract talks broke down between the Broadway Actors Union, Equity, and theater producers on Saturday. No further talks are scheduled with the producers' trade group, so now Equity is approaching individual producers and on Sunday reached a labor agreement with the producer of The Boy from Oz. This prevents any work stoppage for that musical, though a strike authorization for all other Broadway shows could come as early as this week.
Under a new program, postal workers who are determined to be permanently ill or injured could lose all of the benefits of their union contract. The program, called the Outplacement Initiative, would use government funding to send employees to work for private companies. When placed, the worker will lose union representation, have health benefits switched to the new employers, and their federal pension will be frozen without future earning potential. Currently being tested in Flushing, New York, the Postal Service expects to expand the program throughout the country if successful.
Here's today's Dow Bob Report. America is a land of equal opportunity, right? Well, if someone's lacking health insurance at retirement age, they're 43% more likely to die prematurely than their peers, according to a new study by Health Affairs. The report translates into more than 100,000 preventable deaths for people between the ages of 55 to 64, placing uninsurance as the third most common cause of death for this age group. You've been listening to WIND, the Workers' Independent News Service. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
You put in 30 years at the company. You got good pay, health care. Then they send your job overseas. And under George Bush, the company actually gets a tax break for doing it. Now, Bush says we're in recovery. And after a year, you finally land another job, and you wonder, is this what you worked your whole life for? We're not being led. We're being misled.
Bush and gang came into office claiming to be morally superior to the sexually crass Bill Clinton. They took special glee in highlighting Clinton's reprehensible attempts to parse the legal language of what constitutes sex, pointing to Bill's infamous contortions over what the definition of is. But, holy hypocrite, look who's doing legalistic contortions now, parsing the language of the law not to excuse personal sexual misconduct, but to rationalize the much more crass act of official torture. Internal memos now show that all of Bush's top lawyers were straining at the bit to unleash the CIA, FBI, and military forces to break both U.S. and international laws that ban the use of torture when interrogating prisoners of war. One in particular, a 2002 memo by Jay Bybee, top legal counsel in Bush's Justice Department, went to extremes to claim that in grilling detainees, the Bushites could use practically any torture methods short of killing prisoners without violating either our own nation's torture law or the Geneva Accords. Bybee's memo went into excruciating detail to parse such terms as severe pain, imminent death, and profound mental disruption. The memo concludes that only physical pain as intense as you would expect from organ failure or death qualifies as torture. Short of that, anything goes. The same anything-goes mentality that corrupted Enron and most of corporate America now is loose at the highest levels of government. It just shows that if top officials unleash crafty lawyers to justify the most despicable actions, they will. By the way, George W. has subsequently put Bybee on the U.S. Court of Appeals, where he can apply his anything-goes mentality to all the cases that come before him. This is Jim Hightower saying, we need a president who will choose lawyers of conscience, not of convenience.
38%.
46%.
42%.
I cut my payments in half.
How much can you cut your monthly student loan payments by refinancing with College Loan Corporation? To find out, just call 1-800-2-COLLEGE. You'll quickly be connected to an expert loan consultant who will answer your questions and tell you how you can cut your monthly payment by up to 50% by refinancing your federal student loans at rates as low as 2.63%. 1-800-2-COLLEGE. It's the smartest call you can make.
Your dog eats your new sofa. Pet satisfaction rating 3%. Your hairdresser doesn't know burnt auburn from burnt toast. Hair color satisfaction rating 5%. After years of marriage, your husband still leaves the seat up. Spouse satisfaction rating minus 2%. Your car insurance company saves you hundreds of dollars and handles your claim quickly and fairly. Car insurance satisfaction rating 97%. Oh, you must have Geico.
Geico's customer satisfaction stands at 97%. How would you rate your car insurance company? Geico. 1-800-947-AUT.
He's the man who uncovers corporate lies, exposes political corruption, and has a clear vision of what America could become. Here's Tom Hartman.
And welcome back, my friends. Tom Hartman here with you, broadcasting live coast to coast, border to border on terrestrial radio stations. Beaming down from the depths of outer space on the Sirius satellite system. Streaming around the planet on radiopower.org. And today, starting today, for this hour and a half of our three-hour program, we are on cable radio network channel 1. We just picked up another roughly 300 cities in Minnesota, Michigan, Maine, Kentucky, Nevada, New Hampshire, California, Alaska, Arizona. Well, basically all across New Hampshire, Nevada, Nebraska. The list goes on and on and on here. Oregon, Pennsylvania, Oklahoma, Ohio, North Carolina, New York, New Hampshire. Greetings to all of our new listeners on Cable Radio Network Channel 1. If this is the first time you've heard the program, Tom Hartman here with you. And greetings to all patriots, lovers of democracy, truth and justice, and believers in peace, freedom, and the American way. Our telephone number, if you'd like to participate in the program, is 1-866, one of those newfangled toll-free numbers, 1-866-889-8894. When George Tenet said, it's a slam dunk to George W. Bush, why didn't George W. Bush say, prove it? This absolutely confounds me. I want to just finish this thing up. We talked about this somewhat in the first hour of the program here, and in Bob Woodward's book, that former Enron lobbyist Ed Gillespie, the head of the Republican National Committee, the guy who's making $700,000 a year from Enron until they fired him, and now runs the Republican National Committee, which is just perfect, you know, transition. I mean, it's just... Anyhow, Ed Gillespie and the RNC are out there saying, buy this book and read it, right? It's on their website. They're not disputing it. And in this book, Tenet comes to Bush and says, okay, here's all of our intelligence on Iraq. Here's everything we know about Iraq. Here's, you know, what we've found and blah-de-blah-de-blah, lays it all out. And George says something to the effect of, is that all you've got? I mean, I don't think the average American's going to buy that. I'm not sure I buy it. And Tenet stands up, according to Woodward, Tenet stands up, raises his hands in the air and says, Mr. President, it's a slam dunk. Now, at that point, if you or I were the president, wouldn't we say, but, you know, the evidence you just showed me doesn't look like a slam dunk. Prove it to me. Unless you had already decided that you wanted to do it. Unless you had already decided you were going to go to war. And here we have this report here today that there were two versions of the National Intelligence Estimate. Oddly, there was a classified version and an unclassified version. The classified version was the one that George W. saw. The unclassified version was the one that the world saw. The classified one was full of things like, we're not sure, it appears, according to an unreliable source, blah, blah, blah. All that stuff got stripped out. And here's the kicker. As the subhead in today's Los Angeles Times article about this by Mark Mazzetti, the title of the article is Key Revisions Were Made to CIA Document. The subhead, pre-war analysis of the threat went from hedged in private to blunt in public. Who made the changes is a mystery. It's a mystery. We don't know who did this. We don't know who made these changes. Now, keep in mind, this was September of 2002. What's significant about that? It was 60 days before the elections. It was a month and a half, 2 months before the elections of 2002. This was an October surprise, my friends. This whole thing, you know, the timing of this, they could have waited a month or two. Well, maybe they couldn't have, because Hans Blix would have demonstrated, as he was apparently and well into the process of doing, that there's no there. There's no weapons there. But as the Los Angeles Times points out, at the Senate committee's sharpest criticism of the unclassified document focuses not on changes made in haste, but on the systematic alteration of the classified version. For example, the panel cited changes made in the section of the National Intelligence Estimate dealing with chemical weapons. This is the original. Although we have little specific information on Iraq's CW stockpile, Saddam Hussein probably has stocked at least 100 metric tons of such poisons. That was the version that George W. read. Now, here's the version that we gave to the world and the American people and the United States Senate. Quote, Saddam probably has stocked a few hundred metric tons of CW agents, end quote. What was deleted from there was, although we have little specific information on Iraq's CW stockpile. All of these changes. What is going on with this? 1-866-889-8894, our telephone number, 13 minutes past the hour. Tom Hartman here with you, and Alan in Pennsylvania is on the line. Hey, Alan, what's up?
Hey, I was wondering, if we did go into Iraq and we found all those weapons that they said that there would be there, like we would open up these warehouses and they'd be full of WMDs, do you think the outcome would have been a lot different?
Yeah, it would, because the Iraqi people themselves would have looked. If we went into Iraq and we found that Iraq indeed was on the edge of attacking either the United States or any of its neighbors, if it was just clear and obvious, and not just, you'd have to have more than just finding a few weapons. You'd also have to find, you know, for example, I mean, if somebody came over here and invaded the United States and says, oh, you guys are terrible, you got nuclear, sure enough, we've got them. They're pointed at the Soviet Union, or the former Soviet states, you know, Russia and all the stands. I mean, they're still pointed. We've still got 10,000 nuclear weapons. We have chemical weapons. We have biological weapons. But somebody, in order to cause the American people to be horrified by that, they would have to come in here and prove to you and me that our government had gone sufficiently insane that we intended to launch those things against Canada next week.
Yeah, that's why I was for the war, because I believed our president. I didn't believe that they were lying.
Yeah.
But I found out they were lying. I'm pretty angry, and I sent plenty of letters to the papers.
Yeah. Well, that's the tragedy of it. It's truly the tragedy of it. Alan, thanks for the call. Good to hear from you. Appreciate your calling and your listening. 14 minutes past the hour. It's the Tom Hartman program. Chuck in New Mexico has some thoughts on this. 1-866-889-8894. Hey, Chuck, what's up?
Well, you know, I love the fact that the Republicans are going on and on about, well, you see, it proves that the administration didn't lie, blah, blah, blah. Yeah, it proves the administration has absolutely no leadership capability, because all they have done for the last 3 years is blame everything on Bill Clinton. And I find it fascinating that they retained as CIA director a Clinton appointee. And I think, and this is just purely my opinion, that these guys in the Republican administration kept this guy on purpose because they needed a sacrificial lamb.
Yeah, he certainly has served the purpose of being a good scapegoat. I would argue somewhat with you, Chuck, in saying that they have no leadership capability, however, because it appears, and this is the point that Dianne Feinstein kept trying to make over the weekend. She was on the Intelligence Committee, the Senate Intelligence Committee that came up with this report. And essentially what she was saying is that when the report about the White House comes out, which will be after the elections, because the report has been split in two, and this was necessary in order to get the Republicans who control the committee and control the Senate to allow the thing to be made public, that they had to say, okay, here's part of the report is about what the CIA did, part of the report is about what the White House and the Department of Defense did. And that part about what the White House and the Department of Defense did, that's not going to come out until after the elections. And that's the more important part. But the point of their leadership was that she pointed out that the CIA was behind the president, that is, in time, after the fact, in statements. In other words, the president would come out and he would make a public statement. Not necessarily just George Bush, by the way. It was George Bush, Wolfowitz, Pearl, Cheney, and Rumsfeld, largely. These guys would come out and they would make a statement. They would say, for example, we know that these guys are trying to reconstitute their nuclear program. And then the CIA would have to go scrambling to find evidence for that. And they'd come up with the best they could, and they'd toss that out. And then they'd say, oh, and we know that they've got mobile weapon laboratories. Okay, this stuff was coming through the Office of Special Plans. This was coming through this in-house agency.
Do you know about those mobile weapons things? There was a phenomenal report on that about 7 months ago.
Yeah.
They found all these trailers, and they had, you know, tanks of, you know, compressed gas and this and that and the other thing. And this is great. You can find this on CNN and on BBC as well. And fundamentally, Cheney came out and said, see, we found these mobile weapons plans, you know.
Oh, Bush said it when he was in Poland. He said, we have found weapons of mass destruction. He said it in a news conference in Poland.
You know what they were? You know what they were?
They were to manufacture hydrogen.
These mobile weapons, quote, weapons things, were sold to the Iraqis by the British. They're support structures for weather balloons.
I know, and it's not actually, they weren't weather balloons. When you're firing artillery, you know, and they were using artillery in the war against Iran. When you're firing artillery and you're firing a shell that's going to land 5-10 miles downrange, it's really critical that you know which way the wind is blowing at altitude, at, you know, 500 to 1,000, 2,000 feet up there.
I think that's right.
And so what these mobile labs were designed to do, and countries all over the world have these things, and you're right, and they were sold by Great Britain to Iraq. And, in fact, Scott Ritter on this program a year and a half ago, before we actually went to war with Iraq, was on this program describing those things. And he said, you know, they're going to pull these things out of the hat and say that they're – and he said, I've seen them. They're there. They make hydrogen gas. They're fermentation units that make hydrogen gas to fill up hydrogen balloons so that they can put those balloons on a string and reel them out 500, 1,000, 2,000 feet up into the air and see which way the wind is blowing so they can calibrate their artillery. And they've been doing this for 40 years.
That's exactly what
they've been doing this. They've been doing this since World War II with these things. Yeah. So.
Oh, wonderful. What a great planet.
Yeah. What a great administration. Thanks for the call, Chuck. Good to hear from you. The committee's report, continuing here with the Los Angeles Times report, the committee's report describes not just sins of omission, you know, omitting the qualifiers, but of addition. The classified National Intelligence Estimate, for example, said, quote, Iraq has some lethal and incapacitating biological weapons agents and is capable of quickly producing a variety of such agents, including anthrax for delivery by bombs, missiles, aerial spray, and covert operatives. In the unclassified version, the words potentially against the U.S. homeland are inserted at the end of that sentence. Do you get this? The classified version says, we think that Iraq has the capability of making chemical and biological weapons. The unclassified version, the version that we all saw and the Senate saw, had tacked onto the end a sentence that says, potentially against the U.S. homeland. And to this day, we don't know who made those changes. This is, you know, talk about the mysteries. I mean, this is a mystery bigger than who was at Dick Cheney's energy meeting where they carved up Iraq in the first place back in March of 2001 before 9/11. 20 minutes past the hour. Tom Hartman with you.
I guess I better let the dog in.
Like the small dog that rules the house, Small Dog Electronics is the small computer company that really rules when it comes to customer service. Small Dog Electronics is your authorized Apple reseller in Wakefield, Vermont. Sure, you can buy your computer out of a catalog, but how do you know you're really getting what you want or what you need? At Small Dog, they don't work on commission. Their only motivation is making sure you're a happy customer. Put your business on the leading edge with the world's fastest computer, the new Macintosh G5. You'll finish the job ahead of the pack, and automatic security updates lock out viruses. That's speed and dependability that will keep you focused on your customers instead of sitting on hold with tech support.
I guess you want to get on the couch, huh?
Like the small dog who everybody makes room for, Small Dog Electronics is big on customer service. Small Dog Electronics. Check them out on the web at smalldog.com or at their showroom on Route 100 in Waitsfield.
No way. You're not getting on the bed.
Do you want to own a computer? Is your credit less than perfect? If you have a checking account and can afford a weekly payment of $29.95 for just 12 months, then you are already approved for a brand new IBM, Dell, eMachine, or other name brand computer guaranteed. You heard right. Bad credit? No credit? No problem. There is no credit check, so you will not be turned down. If you have a checking account and can afford a weekly payment of $29.95 for just 12 months, you are approved for your brand new name brand computer. Just call 800-588-0596. Freedom Frog Funding says you are approved. So give us a call today at 800-588-0596 to have your brand new computer shipped right to you. And if you act now, we'll add a $200 upgrade and a one-year warranty for free. You heard right. We will upgrade your computer and throw in a warranty absolutely free. So don't wait. Let Freedom Frog Funding send you the computer of your dreams today. Call 800-588-0596. That number is 800-588-0596.
At last, there's a positive focus on a condition that affects millions. Read The Edison Gene, ADHD, and The Gift of the Hunter Child by Tom Hartman, best-selling author of Attention Deficit Disorder, A Different Perception. John Rady, author of User's Guide to the Brain, says this about the Edison Gene.
Once again, with tireless scholarship and a bit of poetry, Tom Hartman helps take us to the edge of knowing ourselves, our brains, and our world.
The Edison Gene, available in bookstores everywhere.
Hey, what does this word make you think of? Tchaikovsky.
Isn't it? So what's the word?
No, that is the word.
You lost me.
All right, who's Martha Graham?
She invented the graham cracker. Before her, there was only soda crackers.
Maybe they're not getting enough art. Kids who participate in the arts do better in school and in life. To learn more, visit AmericansForTheArts.org. Because all kids should get to appreciate Tchaikovsky's music and Martha Graham's dance. Art. Ask for more. A public service message brought to you by Americans for the Arts and the Ad Council.
In the foreword to Tom Hartman's book, The Last Hours of Ancient Sunlight, The Fate of the World and What We Can Do Before It's Too Late, renowned author Joseph Chilton Pierce writes,
"To discover brilliant, innovative, creative, and original thinking is one of life's rare privileges. To discover that such a thinker has focused on the most critical of all issues facing our species is encouraging. Because The Last Hours of Ancient Sunlight is a seminal work offering a viewpoint original yet ancient, I see our situation today in a new light. And because of the scope and depth of this work, I find it inspiring as well as disturbing. A rather exhausted superlative in praise of Tom Hartman's book, The Prophet's Way, which I rightly called the most important book I've ever read. But now I find this sequel calling for equal praise, since the issue here addresses the whole of our species, and indeed all species.
The Last Hours of Ancient Sunlight, The Fate of the World and What We Can Do Before It's Too Late by Tom Hartman, in bookstores everywhere.
Democracy to the United States of America. Here's Tom Hartman.
Shake it up. Shake it up. Shake it up.
And welcome back.
Dance all night.
Tom Hartman here with you.
You don't need no bad excuse.
Interesting. Just lost my right ear. Anyway, welcome back. It's the Tom Hartman Radio Program. 25 minutes past the hour in the classified national intelligence estimate. You know, what did George have to say about that? I think it's really, frankly, remarkable that we're not hearing more revisitations of these comments.
As a condition for ending the Persian Gulf War, the Iraqi regime was required to destroy its weapons of mass destruction, to cease all development of such weapons, and to stop all support for terrorist groups. The Iraqi regime has violated all of those obligations.
Oh, yeah?
It possesses and produces chemical and biological weapons.
Oh, yeah?
It is seeking nuclear weapons.
Yes. And then, of course, Frank Luntz, the Republican pollster, said, whenever you talk about Iraq, be sure to talk about 9/11. Even though there's no connection between the two, we want to create in people's mind a psychological connection. So you try and tie them together.
We must also never forget the most vivid events of recent history. On September the 11th, 2001, America felt its vulnerability, even to threats that gather on the other side of the earth.
This way you can be honest. You don't have to say, you know, Saddam had anything to do with 9/11. And you can create an interesting landscape where as many as 70% of Americans, as of about 6 months ago, actually believed that at least one of the hijackers on 9/11 was an Iraqi, and that Saddam was behind it. And in fact, of course, neither of those are the case. So you toss in 9/11, and then you go back and you talk some more about the dangers.
First, I'm asked why Iraq is different from other countries or regimes that also have terrible weapons.
Yeah, this is a good question. I mean, Pakistan has nuclear weapons, and it's run by a military dictatorship that is probably one of the most repressive on the planet. They have torture chambers. They've committed mass murder against their own people. Zimbabwe, they don't have weapons of mass destruction. They don't have nuclear weapons like Pakistan, but, you know, you want a bad guy. Mugabe has killed 2-3 million of his own people. Look at Burma. How about China? They have nuclear weapons. They've murdered over 1 million people just in Tibet. Not to mention people all across China. But excuse me, they're our trading partner. Without China, Walmart wouldn't be as wealthy as they are. So and Walmart is a significant Republican contributor. So anyhow, George says some ask why. Why is Iraq unique from all of these other countries? That's a good question.
First, I'm asked why Iraq is different from other countries or regimes that also have terrible weapons. While there are many dangers in the world, the threat from Iraq stands alone because it gathers the most serious dangers of our age in one place.
Right. Yeah. 1-866-889-8894, our telephone number. Rick in Michigan's on the line. Hey, Rick, what's up? We've only got about 40 seconds here. If it's a quickie. If it's going to be longer, I can hold you over the break.
Yeah, well, you just told me then.
Okay, well, we got 30 seconds here right now, so why don't you get started?
Okay, well, basically, I think you're onto something here about how even establishment institutions like this 9/11 Commission and Senate Intelligence Committee, they're all starting to find out, you know, that something's wrong here. And even people like Pat Roberts, he doesn't want to criticize his presidential candidate, but he knows there's something dirty going on here.
Oh, yeah. Pat Roberts has gone out of his way to be careful what he says, but it's clear he's freaked. The guy's freaked out.
He knows there's something rotten in Denmark, but he just can't say too much because he's going to alienate his party's nominee for president, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
So be careful.
The old partisan thing there. It's the Tom Hartman Radio Program, 29 minutes past the hour. Talk radio for the rest of us, exposing the con in conservative. Tom Hartman here with you. For more than 27 years, the Progressive magazine In These Times has provided groundbreaking coverage of movements for social, environmental, and economic justice. Author and broadcast personality Studs Terkel calls In These Times his bi-weekly tonic. In These Times features award-winning reporting and analysis of national and international news. Find In These Times on your newsstand or visit us online at www.inthesetimes.com or call 1-800-827-0270. 1-800-827-0270.
pop and not so pop culture, democracy, and the news of the day. This is the Tom Hartman Program.
You're listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News Service. I'm Jesse Russell.
And I'm Sarah Turner. It's day 12 of an indefinite hunger strike by Gary Nilsson, the president of the Communication Workers of America, Local 1365 in Andover, Massachusetts. Nilsson's union has shrunk from 3,000 to 300 members in 3 years. Nilsson is fasting to get a better financial package for 34 maintenance workers due to be laid off from Lucent Technologies this Friday. The North Shore Labor Council is asking area union workers to show their support by fasting for 24 hours. Nilsson vowed to continue drinking only fruit juice and water until he gets his members the severance package he feels they deserve.
A plan by an iron ore supplier to hire temporary workers during a labor dispute has steelworkers fired up. Cleveland Cliffs Incorporated has announced in a letter that if the labor dispute is not resolved by July 31st and a strike does occur, non-regional workers will be used to keep its 4 Minnesota and Michigan mines running. Temporary workers haven't been used during labor disputes in the Iron Range mining industry for more than 30 years. The company says that the demand for taconite pellets is at an all-time high, but inventories are low, and if there is a disruption, it could cause vendors to look elsewhere. The union says the company is just trying to threaten the employees by using a classic union-busting technique.
Lights on Broadway could go dark as early as this week. Contract talks broke down between the Broadway Actors Union, Equity, and theater producers on Saturday. No further talks are scheduled with the producers' trade group, so now Equity is approaching individual producers and on Sunday reached a labor agreement with the producer of The Boy from Oz. This prevents any work stoppage for that musical, though a strike authorization for all other Broadway shows could come as early as this week.
Under a new program, postal workers who are determined to be permanently ill or injured could lose all of the benefits of their union contract. The program, called the Outplacement Initiative, would use government funding to send employees to work for private companies. When placed, the worker will lose union representation, have health benefits switched to the new employers, and their federal pension will be frozen without future earning potential. Currently being tested in Flushing, New York, the Postal Service expects to expand the program throughout the country if successful.
Here's today's Dow Bob Report. America is a land of equal opportunity, right? Well, if someone's lacking health insurance at retirement age, they're 43% more likely to die prematurely than their peers, according to a new study by Health Affairs. The report translates into more than 100,000 preventable deaths for people between the ages of 55 to 64, placing uninsurance as the third most common cause of death for this age group. You've been listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News Service. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
And welcome back. 26 and a half minutes before the hour. Tom Hartman here with you. We're commenting, considering, thinking about, discussing weapons of mass destruction, this administration, the new report out from the Senate Intelligence Committee, George W. Bush's thoughts on the issue.
If we know Saddam Hussein has dangerous weapons today, and we do, does it make any sense for the world to wait to confront him as he grows even stronger and develops even more dangerous weapons?
Good question. If we really do, Rick in Michigan is on the line. He had some thoughts on this. We were talking just before the break. Rick, listening on WTKG in Grand Rapids. Welcome back. What's up?
Yes, thank you for being so kind to hold me over.
Sure.
Well, you know, there's so much of this that is so disingenuous with the president. You mentioned China, of course, which has killed more people in its communist phase since 1949 than any regime in history, and yet we know Richard Nixon went over there and had cocktail parties with these guys. We had the ping pong diplomacy, as you mentioned, many corporations, including our beloved Amway, which is called AltaCorp now here in West Michigan, is doing business over there. So And plus the fact we actually know they have nukes and they might use them.
Yeah, in fact, they've threatened to use them against Taiwan, which is our ally.
And wouldn't it be interesting to see what our brave, fearless president would do then? I don't wish that to happen, but it could happen. Well, then they talk about it's really crazy to be talking about what they did in Iran. We wanted them to win that war against Iran, and rightfully so, because of the two, Iran was the more evil and still is.
Yeah, well, Iran was the theocracy. And, yes. And what I find really fascinating about this, Rick, is that the theocracy in Iran, this goes back to the caller that we had in the last hour where he was saying, you know, we need to establish a footprint in the Middle East, a presence in the Middle East to show these guys how to do democracy. Well, Iran, the average person on the street in Iran is probably the only country in the Middle East left that is strongly pro-American. And it's really fascinating when you look at the news reports about this and you talk to people who've come back from Iran. And the reason why is because Iran has a secular parliamentary democracy, and they have what would be sort of the equivalent of our Supreme Court, which has absolute veto power over that, only it's run by a bunch of mullahs. It's run by the religious.
Right.
And every time a democratic reform bubbles up from the people of Iran into the parliament, and the parliament passes it, and it gets signed into law by the prime minister, the mullahs veto it. And this has been going on for like 5, 6, 7 years now, over and over and over again, basically ever since the Iran-Iraq war ended. Iran has been, you know, the people have been aggressively trying to get more and more democratic, and the mullahs, they're hanging on by their fingernails. I mean, the CIA, it's fascinating to read some of these declassified reports that are coming out of here. They're starting to read like the CIA reports that were coming out of the Soviet Union 3 years, 5 years, you know, during the Carter era. When Jimmy Carter was president, the CIA was fully expecting any day now the Soviet Union is going to fall from their own internal rot.
And when it happened in 89, the CIA did not expect it.
Well, it depends on who you talk to at the CIA. I mean,
but getting back to the Iraq.
But that's my point with Iran. You know, we were supporting Iraq against Iran because Iraq was secular, and we thought that's better than the religious. And now the religious ended up, you know, the war was a draw. They both survived, but the religious have fallen anyway. I mean,
what you have in Saudi Arabia is basically a sort of a theocracy, which Bin Laden thinks is not conservative enough.
Right.
We used Bin Laden and the Mujahideen against these atheistic communists in Afghanistan, and it's come back to bite us. And I think it should make a lot of people nervous that George Bush talks in these apocalyptic terms like, well, I talk to a higher father. Well, you got to be careful when somebody thinks he's talking to God of what he might do. And we can condemn, as we should, the horrific thing that Al-Qaeda did on September 11th, but let's not forget that those people believe in God.
Yeah.
They believe in God so much that they were willing to take their own lives and thousands of other people and get a reward in some other realm which they call heaven. And frankly, although I'm a Christian myself, I don't consider myself a fundamentalist loony. And I think a lot of these people are supporting George Bush. And I don't personally think George Bush has a religious bone in his body, but he's just pandering to this mindset because that's his basic constituency. But getting back to Iraq, do you also hear the business about what happened to the Kurds and how they were massacred and the Shiites?
Yeah.
That all happened because George Sr. promised to help those people if they rose up against Saddam and gave them not one bit of help.
Well, yes and no. The Kurd thing happened on Reagan's watch.
And
Rumsfeld went over a week later and congratulated Saddam, and that's that famous handshake picture. The Shiite thing happened right after the Gulf War in 91, and yes, George Sr. was president, and he told the Shiite Muslims in the South, if you guys can pull off a coup against Saddam, we will help you. And they rose up and tried, and we didn't help. We didn't participate, and they were slaughtered.
And now all of a sudden, Gaddafi is our latest best buddy.
Yeah.
And nothing has happened to change the fact that he probably murdered many innocent Americans as well as other people.
Well, yeah, and what's amazing about Gaddafi is that the Bushies are running around going, oh, Gaddafi has given up his weapons of mass destruction because he's so terrified because he saw what we did in Iraq. The reality, I mean, all you have to do is look at a timeline. Just look at the history of Iraq, of Libya. Gaddafi has had sanctions ever since the Lockerbie bombing.
Yes.
Not just by us, by the European Union, by NATO, by the United Nations. I mean, he has really had financial problems.
Sure.
And he has been desperately trying to suck up to the rest of the world. He paid off, he admitted to the Lockerbie thing as to the extent that he could.
Yes.
He paid off millions, hundreds of millions of dollars to the victims of Lockerbie. He paid for the trials. He's paid for the reclamation of the ground in Scotland. He's done all this stuff. This was all long before we invaded Iraq, because he was just absolutely desperate to get back into normal trade relationships with the rest of the world, because he couldn't buy caviar, or whatever. I mean, he couldn't buy telephone systems. I mean, you can't make everything in Libya.
But you know what else is ironic? If I understand this correctly, and maybe I've got it reversed, that either bin Laden had a contract out on Gaddafi or vice versa.
Well, he's another secular dictator who really does not want fundamentalist Islam rising up in his country. And that's why when it became obvious to Gaddafi that George W. needed some PR, some good PR, Gaddafi's no dummy. Gaddafi goes to George W. and says, hey, you're taking all this grief for invading Iraq. I'll tell you what, I will promise to give up my weapons of mass destruction if you'll allow me to have, trade status with you guys. And W knows, now, first of all, Gaddafi didn't have any weapons of mass destruction to give up. He had a university, a little reactor in a university, like you'll find in probably 40 or 50 universities around the United States.
Sure.
But
of course, I'll give him credit. Right after 9/11 happened, he did say, this is a terrible thing that happened. And whoever did this, he says the United States has a right to retaliate. Now, I don't know whether he was doing that out of the goodness of his heart or if he thought maybe he'd be next on the hit list.
No, I think the entire world was horrified. There was a candlelight vigil in Tehran, Iran, on the day after 9/11.
I think what happened in China, in the eastern, western part of that country, there were some Muslim fundamentalists there that the Chinese just massacred with almost hardly any attention from the world media, because I think everybody was just so horrified of Islamic fundamentalists that it was open season on these folks, and rightfully so, if they're going to act like that. But one last point could I make here?
Sure.
Getting back to the morality of conservative republicanism, and I don't mean to knock Ronald Reagan, because I actually voted for him twice, believe it or not, as liberal as I am. But one thing that really horrified me was his administration's support of the Pol Pot regime in Cambodia. You remember that?
I do, yeah.
They actually said, this was the position of the administration, if it wasn't Ron himself, that was the legitimate government of Cambodia, one of the greatest per capita mass murderers of all time. And we had a lecture here at the Ford Museum here in Grand Rapids, and I asked the person giving the lecture, why in the world did the United States government support Cambodia? And he says the reason is because they hated the Vietnamese for what they did to us by, basically defeating us there. And since Cambodia and Vietnam were enemies, we supported the Cambodian regime, a horrible man like Pol Pot, whom the Vietnamese eventually drove out of power.
Right.
So let's not hear anymore about godly, democratic, moral, guidance coming from the Republican Party. Not that I'm absolving the Democrats, but these folks are totally pragmatic. They'll do what's good for them politically and financially. There's no morality in this at all.
Yeah, yeah, good point. Rick, thanks for the call.
Thank you.
I appreciate it. And yes, Pol Pot, it's fascinating. And it's the two fascinating things about Pol Pot. Number one, he was really trying to create a cultural amnesia. The first people that Pol Pot murdered were people who wore glasses and people who were over 40. And the reason why was because he wanted to create a cultural amnesia. He redesignated the calendar, the year zero. The first year of Pol Pot's regime became the year zero on the calendar. The next year was year one, right? We've finished 1 year. Now, it's interesting. You look back on the history of what we call Western civilization, how the Romans did the same thing. They redesignated the calendar. It's now year zero, right? This was, 2,000 years ago. But in any case, Pol Pot, number one, he did that. And number two, it was the Vietnamese who invaded Cambodia ultimately when we sat by and watched 2 million people be slaughtered in Cambodia. It was the Vietnamese who invaded and put an end to Pol Pot's merry little activities. That's a fascinating, horrific situation. I knew fairly well, actually. He wrote a piece for one of my books on ADD. Dr. Will Crinan, who was Pol Pot's physician. The Red Cross, in the early years of the Pol Pot regime, the Red Cross provided medical services to pretty much anybody. And Will is a Canadian physician, and he had been the doctor to Pol Pot. And boy, did he have some stories to tell. But I digress. Let's get back to George W. Another thought for the day from, actually, we'll go with this. Another thought for the day from George W. Bush about, you know, what, why, how. See, this is the stuff that we were hearing just before the elections in 2002.
This is a massive stockpile of biological weapons and is capable of killing millions. We know that the regime has produced thousands of tons of chemical agents, including mustard gas, sarin nerve gas, VX nerve gas.
Sounds like they are truly terrible people.
Iraq possesses ballistic missiles.
Oh, really?
With a likely range of hundreds of miles.
Well, hundreds of miles isn't going to affect us, is it? I mean, who is that going to harm?
Far enough to strike Saudi Arabia, Israel, Turkey, and other nations.
Yeah, but still, why don't we then suggest to Saudi Arabia, Israel, and Turkey that they attack Iraq? I mean, come on, George. Got to give me a better reason.
In a region where more than 135,000 American civilians and service members live and work.
135,000, that's still not enough. Come on, George. I can just see Karl Rove sitting there going, you got to tie it back to a threat to the homeland, George.
We've also discovered through intelligence that Iraq has a growing fleet of manned and unmanned aerial vehicles
Oh-ho.
That could be used to disperse chemical or biological weapons across broad areas.
Oh-ho.
We're concerned that Iraq is exploring ways of using these UAVs for missions targeting the United States.
Well, aha! Now, there you go. Yes, he's coming to get us, that evil man. He's coming to get us. Yes, now we have a reason. We have a reason. And as we find, it was all fiction. It was all made up. It was all made up. But history is so important that we remember that these were the speeches that were made just before the election of 2002. We had become so polarized by this thing. Bush was playing this thing like a fiddle to get Republicans elected in the House and Senate across the United States. Oh, these Democrats, they're not patriotic. They don't care about the fact that this country has unmanned aerial vehicles that are about to attack us. They don't care.
Iraq has attempted to purchase high-strength aluminum tubes and other equipment needed for gas centrifuges.
Equipment, yeah, this is a problem here.
Which are used to enrich uranium for nuclear weapons.
If
the Iraqi regime is able to produce, buy, or steal an amount of highly enriched uranium a little larger than a single softball, it could have a nuclear weapon in less than a year.
Well, actually, no. And again, here we find that in today's paper and over the weekend, we learned that the original intelligence estimates did not say any of these things. They said, there may be a possibility. We have one source that Ahmad Chalabi's nephew says.
We've experienced the horror of September the 11th.
Oh, yeah. Now bring it back to 9/11. See, this is, you know, Frank Luntz's talking point. Be sure whenever you mention Iraq that you mention 9/11 in the same sentence so that people will think that Saddam and Iraq had something to do with 9/11, even though there's no relationship whatsoever.
We have seen that those who hate America are willing to crash airplanes into buildings full of innocent people. Our enemies would be no less willing. In fact, they would be eager to use biological or chemical or a nuclear weapon.
Oh, what a great segue, tying you know, Iraq, our enemies, and it's because they hate America, not because they hate American foreign policy, not because they're upset that American soldiers are on the ground in Saudi Arabia protecting the oil, no. And finally,
facing clear evidence of peril, we cannot wait for the final proof, the smoking gun that could come in the form of a mushroom cloud.
Right. And now we discover, as Republican Pat Roberts, I believe he's the Republican from Kansas, as I recall, as the Republicans on the House Intelligence, on the Senate Intelligence Committee, unanimously voted. George, they were all lies, and you knew it. 10 minutes before the hour, Tom Hartman here with you. Time for regime change, 113 days from today. Stick around.
Who is it?
Special delivery.
Who?
Pizza Man.
Hey, you're not the Pizza Man. You're the cable guy again.
Price Patrol.
No, you're not. I can see your van. You're the cable company. I'm not going to let you raise my rates again. I'm calling American Satellite to get a DirecTV system.
Presidential candidate.
Are you going to offer me over 125 digital quality channels for as little as $39.99 a month, including my local channels?
Ice Cream Man.
Yeah, like that's going to work. If I call American Satellite right now, I can get a four-room DirecTV system, including professional installation free. Can you beat that?
Pizza Man.
You already tried that. Well, that's it. I'm calling to get my DirecTV system.
Call 800-505-1546. That's 800-505-1546. For new customers only. Annual programming commitment required. Ask how you can get your first 6 months for only $29.99 a month, a $60 value. Offer ends July 17th. Call now. 800-505-1546.
Are George Bush's policies getting you down? Have you had enough of Bush's messianic militarism? Does John Ashcroft's assault on the Bill of Rights scare you? Do you believe that Dick Cheney had his conscience surgically removed 3 decades ago? Are you angry at the Iraq fiasco that was the brainchild of Deputy Secretary of Defense Paul out of his Wolfowitz? Well, then subscribe to the Progressive Magazine. You'll get the insights of Barbara Ehrenreich, the inspiration of Howard Zinn, and the mirth of Molly Ivins, Will Durst, and Kate Clinton. They'll help you survive this dark age. And check this out. You can subscribe today for only $12 for 12 monthly issues. Simply get on the web and go to www.progressive.org or call 1-800-827-0555 and mention offer radio. That's 1-800-827-0555 and mention the radio offer from the Tom Hartman program. That's the Progressive. It's your antidote to reactionary policies.
Tom Hartman will be joining the exceptional faculty of The Great Rethinking, The Prophets Oxford, taking place the weekend of September 10th through 12th at Oxford University, England. You are invited to join Tom Hartman in Oxford, along with other leading visionaries, including Vandana Shiva, Heldon Caldicott, and Rupert Sheldrake, among others, to rethink and reshape our collective future. The Great Rethinking Oxford premise is that this tumultuous time in our human history may be crafted into the birthing of something truly new. And you can play your part in shaping this new worldview by joining Tom Hartman September 10th through 12th. To find out how, go to the website greatmystery.org. That's greatmystery.org. Together, we will make a difference.
With the Workers' Independent News Service, I'm Sarah Turner bringing you today's feature story. Union organizing could become a lot harder in the near future. The National Labor Relations Board moved to review the legality of card check agreements, threatening the ability of unions to avoid the lengthy election certification process.
Card check is a way of getting around what has become a dysfunctional system that focuses on the NLRB election.
Nelson Lichtenstein is a professor of history at UC Santa Barbara and author of State of the Union, A Century of American Labor. Under a card check agreement, an employer automatically accepts a union if a majority of workers indicate their intent to form one. Under current U.S. labor law, when a union files for an election, the company has the right to hold captive audience meetings.
They demand that all employees must show up for a meeting in which union representatives are excluded, but in which management has the right to really badger the workers, show horrifying films, and really threaten to shut down the plant.
Even if the union wins an election, the company often fires union activists, hires anti-union consultants, and delays the results of the election for years.
At Columbia University, for example, where the teaching assistants have just finished a strike, the election was held 2 years ago, And so what that means in many workplaces is that the workforce has it turned over, and you really have to begin all over again.
It's a popular form of organizing. Of the 500,000 people who have joined unions in the last few years, the majority joined as part of car check agreements. The NLRB is also reviewing whether or not to allow workers to push for a union decertification vote immediately rather than after the current one-year waiting period. With the Workers' Independent News Service...
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
Got to go back. We got to go back.
And welcome back. 4.5 minutes before the hour. Tom Hartman here with you. Broadcasting live all across the United States. Streaming around the planet on radiopower.org. Here in the middle of the lies and deptions that were discovered, that the Republicans in the Senate, the Republicans on the Senate Intelligence Committee unanimously voted, yes, lies and deceptions that were told to us by the Bush administration. The first half of the report trying to place most of the blame on the CIA. The second half of the report that discusses the White House's role in this, Doug Feith's Office of Special Plans within the Pentagon, the fact that Don Rumsfeld controlled over 80% of the entire intelligence budget and got to pull the strings. All of that, of course, will be discussed after the elections, the Republicans say. This is part of a systematic pattern of behavior on the part of Bush. Back during the election of 2000, on March 15th, he said to Al Gore, "I challenge you to clear the air on some serious charges. I hope you will encourage the White House and the Department of Justice to release all records and photographs relating to the investigation of fundraising." In other words, George Bush back then was opposed to secrets. But now... now he refuses to call on Texas to release his military records now that the Army has accidentally lost all of George's military records. He refuses to release the torture memos written by John Ashcroft and signed by George W. Bush. He refuses to release information about the Medicare bill, how that came to be. Cheney refuses to release Energy Task Force records. Bush refuses to release records of the time he was at Harkin Oil and apparently committed an insider trading deal that was at least 6 to 10 times larger than what Martha Stewart was charged with. The administration refuses to release corrected census data that the raw figures undercount minorities, the poor, and children. Well, they would make unemployment figures look worse. They refuse to release budget information to Congress. This administration even refuses to release FOIA documents, that is, documents that actually were ordered by the courts to be released under the Freedom of Information Act. Absolutely incredible. The most secretive administration in history complaining about Democrats having secrets. And now wanting to keep secret from you and me what the White House had to do with the intelligence so-called failures before we invaded a country that represented no threat to us. This is the Tom Hartman Program, the True People's Radio, the place where smart people get their news.
You've been listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information.
The Founding Fathers thought they'd stop corporations from ever overthrowing elected government. Little did they know that 200 years later, democracy would be stolen and twisted in the name of so-called conservative values. Hi, this is Tom Hartman. The founders of America fought the Revolutionary War against the excessive corporate power of the East India Company, and presidents from Jefferson to Eisenhower warned us that extremely big businesses could destroy democracy. You'll find this extraordinary American story in my book, Unequal Protection: The Rise of Corporate Dominance and the Theft of Human Rights. It starts with the Boston Tea Party and ends with the rampant corruption of the Bush administration. It tells the dramatic story of how corporations hijacked the Bill of Rights, setting the stage for the CEO takeover of America. And it shows how we can take America back and tells the stories of Americans from Pennsylvania to California who are doing just that right now.
Unequal Protection is available in bookstores nationwide. And you can read several chapters online at unequalprotection.com. That's Unequal Protection.
Pop and not-so-pop culture, democracy, and the news of the day. This is the Tom Hartman Program.
You're listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News Service. I'm Jesse Russell.
And I'm Sarah Turner. It's day 12 of an indefinite hunger strike by Gary Nilsen, the president of the Communication Workers of America, Local 1365 in Andover, Massachusetts. Nilsen's union has shrunk from 3,000 to 300 members in 3 years. Nilsen is fasting to get a better financial package for 34 maintenance workers due to be laid off from Lucent Technologies this Friday. The North Shore Labor Council is asking area union workers to show their support by fasting for 24 hours. Nilsen vowed to continue drinking only fruit juice and water until he gets his members the severance package he feels they deserve.
A plan by an iron ore supplier to hire temporary workers during a labor dispute has steel workers fired up. Cleveland Cliffs Incorporated has announced in a letter that if the labor dispute is not resolved by July 31st and a strike does occur, non-regional workers will be used to keep its four Minnesota and Michigan mines running. Temporary workers haven't been used during labor disputes in the Iron Range mining industry for more than 30 years. The company says that the demand for taconite pellets is at an all-time high, but inventories are low, and if there is a disruption, it could cause vendors to look elsewhere. The union says the company is just trying to threaten the employees by using a classic union-busting technique.
Lights on Broadway could go dark as early as this week. Contract talks broke down between the Broadway Actors Union, Equity, and theater producers on Saturday. No further talks are scheduled with the producers' trade group, so now Equity is approaching individual producers and on Sunday reached a labor agreement with the producer of The Boy from Oz. This prevents any work stoppage for that musical, though a strike authorization for all other Broadway shows could come as early as this week.
Under a new program, postal workers who are determined to be permanently ill or injured could lose all of the benefits of their union contract. The program, called the Outplacement Initiative, would use government funding to send employees to work for private companies. When placed, the worker will lose union representation, have health benefits switched to the new employers, and their federal pension will be frozen without future earning potential. Currently being tested in Flushing, New York, the Postal Service expects to expand the program throughout the country if successful.
Here's today's Dow Bob Report. America is a land of equal opportunity, right? Well, if someone's lacking health insurance at retirement age, they're 43% more likely to die prematurely than their peers, according to a new study by Health Affairs. The report translates into more than 100,000 preventable deaths for people between the ages of 55 to 64, placing uninsurance as the third most common cause of death for this age group. You've been listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News Service. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
You put in 30 years at the company. You got good pay, health care. Then they send you a job overseas. And under George Bush, the company actually gets a tax break for doing it. Now, Bush says we're in recovery. Then after a year, you finally land another job, and you wonder, is this what you worked your whole life for? We're not being led. We're being misled.
What's wrong with you people? Don't you know that the economy is humming? That our very own president has declared mission accomplished on his promise of prosperity? That the stock market is up by 40% over last year? That jobs are cropping up like crabgrass? That the bluebird of happiness is officially singing everywhere across our land? And that you should be grateful, for God's sake? Republican politicians, corporate economists, and the media barons are totally befuddled these days because their economic statistics tell them that the economy is in great shape. Yet you wretches, are still grumpy, even giving Bush the lowest marks of his presidency for his economic stewardship. George himself has gone into one of his high-pitched whines, chastising those who can't see the sunshine. He's sounding a whole lot like his daddy did back in 92. Like he's just another rich son of a Bush who is totally oblivious to the realities of America's workaday majority. He's looking at rosy economic indicators handed to him by his political operatives, rather than looking at such real-life pocketbook indicators as jobs that only pay poverty wages, gasoline topping $2 a gallon, milk at $4.43 a gallon, health care costs rising three times faster than wages, and 401ks being shrunk to 1ks. Also with their heads in the clouds are such media powers as the New York Times, which recently bemoaned the public's economic gloom, referring to it as a mood. A mood? Your job's being downsized or offshored, your kids can't afford to go to college, Bush is trying to cut your Social Security benefits and raise your retirement age to 70, and they think you're moody? Meanwhile, a clueless Republican Senator, Jim Talent of Missouri, blithely says that prosperity is everywhere, but, quote, it just takes a while longer for that to filter through to folks. This is Jim Hightower saying, filter this, Senator. We'll believe the economy is humming when we are.
38%.
46%.
42%.
I cut my payments in half.
How much can you cut your monthly student loan payments by refinancing with College Loan Corporation? To find out, just call 1-800-2-COLLEGE. You'll quickly be connected to an expert loan consultant who will answer your questions and tell you how you can cut your monthly payment by up to 50% by refinancing your federal student loans at rates as low as 2.63%. 1-800-2-COLLEGE. It's the smartest call you can make.
You know, out here in West Texas, it gets really hot, and it's a tough, dry heat.
Glenn Austell of Lubbock, Texas, talks about Gold Bond medicated powder.
When I'm working outside, my skin gets itchy and irritated. I guess you call it a heat rash or something like that. But Gold Bond relieves the itch and irritation. It gives me a cool, refreshing sensation. I'm telling you, once you've tried Gold Bond, you can't live without it.
Gold Bond medicated powder cools and soothes heat rash and irritated skin. Use it directed.
I mean, who wouldn't want to feel cool and refreshed?
Calling for a rapid and radical return to the old values that made America great, the values of democracy on which this country was founded, here's Tom Hartman.
And welcome back, friends, patriots, lovers of democracy, truth, and justice, believers in peace, freedom, and the American way. It's Tom Hartman here, broadcasting live coast to coast, border to border, on terrestrial stations from California to North Carolina, beaming down from outer space on the Sirius satellite, streaming around the planet on radiopower.org, and on cable radio network, channels 1 and 4. On cable systems all across the country from Alaska to Maine to Florida and Texas and on and on and on. Okay, Homeland Security Secretary Tom Ridge warned us last week that Osama bin Laden is going to try to disrupt our elections. This statement... I think is singularly significant in that it perpetuates a piece of fiction that the conservatives would like you to believe, and that is that the people of Spain voted for the left-leaning candidate because a train got blown up. When, in fact, news reports at the time pointed out, and it's just absolutely amazing to me how this stuff gets respun by the media. News reports at the time pointed out clearly and unambiguously that the race was a dead heat and that, in fact, the socialist candidate, the left-leaning candidate who won in the Spanish election, looked like he had a small margin of victory over the incumbent president, who was despised by many of his people for lying to them about the war in Iraq. See, the conservative mantra is, oh, you know, in the Al-Qaeda attacked Spain and the Spanish all became suddenly cowards and they suddenly decided, we'll vote for the lefty. Now, number one, that kind of links cowards and lefties together, which is a certainly not a truthful link. And number two, it's not even a statement of fact. The people of Spain were fed up with a government that lied to them. The polls showed it. The polls continue to show it. The bombing in Madrid caused some people to vote for the government that was supportive of George W. Bush because they wanted to get tough on terrorism and all that kind of stuff. And it caused some people to say, see, you know, I knew these guys lied to us, and now it's coming home. But ultimately, when you look at, you know, what was the final outcome of this thing, it really didn't make much difference at all. But the cons want you to think it did. And now you've got Tom Ridge out here saying, well, you know, they're going to try and attack us again. And as a consequence of that, we've got the administration now, according to Newsweek. Newsweek just, you know, did this story. The national version of Catherine Harris. Remember Catherine Harris? She was the one who in Florida in the 2000 election, at the behest of Jeb Bush, in the best tradition of a banana republic, purged from the voting rolls some 70 to 90,000 law-abiding, largely African-American citizens so that they couldn't vote because there were people in Texas who had committed felonies who had similar names to theirs. The great felon, you know, people say, well, George won by 537 votes. Yes, if you only recounted the, was it three or five counties that Al Gore originally wanted recounted? If you did a statewide recount, as the New York Times did, it turns out that Al Gore actually won the entire state by a little less than 1,000 votes. That, of course, was, you know, a halt was put to that by the United States Supreme Court when George Bush hired a trial lawyer and sued Al Gore. And it was heard before the United States Supreme Court. So anyhow, the real theft of the vote was not in the Supreme Court. The real theft of the vote took place 2 months before November of 2000, when Catherine Harris and Jeb Bush decided that voting while black was a crime in Florida, that they weren't going to allow that to happen. And the, you know, I mean, and that was really just the tip of the iceberg in many ways. The purge of the so-called felon list, where they took the names of people from Texas and compared them to the Florida list and knocked them off. That was just the tip of the iceberg. They also had people showing up at the polling, unofficial people who weren't, you know, employees of the state or who weren't acting as employees of the state government, but operatives of the Republican Party showing up at polling places in predominantly poor and black areas with signs that said things like, it is a crime to vote if you don't have your identification, or please be prepared to provide identification before voting. Things like, it's not necessary, actually, in the United States of America to show identification. There's a Republican bill before Congress right now that would make it necessary. And a few states have laws that are kind of close to that, but not Florida. But it was, you know, it was attempted voter intimidation. And some people were like, whoa, what's going on? Why, you know. So anyhow, the next Catherine Harris is a guy named Buster Soares. S-O-A-R-I-E-S. Soares. DeForest Buster Soares Jr. And the White House just appointed him to the newly formed U.S. Election Assistance Commission, which is this commission that came out of the Help America Vote Act thing. His job, theoretically, is to make sure that electronic voting machines get installed all across the country and that they operate properly. What did he do before this? Well, before this, he ran for Congress in New Jersey as a Republican. What a surprise. Well, that's not a crime. But it's funny how the, you know, how these little partisan folks just keep popping up. Well, yeah, Bill Clinton did it too. Well, yeah, you know. There's nobody without sin here, as the old saying goes. But this administration, you know, applying litmus tests to people. So anyhow, this guy Suarez, I'm sure we'll hear his name pronounced by somebody who knows him one of these days soon, has said, let's put into place some plans to suspend the elections in November if those nasty terrorists attack. Why? Because, well, everybody knows the terrorists like John Kerry. See, that's the subtext to all this. I mean, the fact of the matter is, George W. Bush has got to be on the 10 most favorite people list of all time for Osama bin Laden. He has given him great gifts. He let him get away. He attacked an Arab country and is now preparing to occupy it forever. We're building 14 permanent bases in Iraq, thus infuriating the Arabs in the region. Keep in mind, Osama bin Laden's main rationale for attacking the United States on 9/11 was that we had permanent bases where there were infidels, men drinking alcohol, and women who were driving and not wearing veils in Saudi Arabia, on the holy land of Islam. It was unacceptable. And now in the holy land of Iraq. 1-866-889-8894, our telephone number. Is this guy going to succeed in postponing the elections if it looks like John Kerry might be ahead? If they can't control the voting machines, if people have awakened, you know, what's going on with this? 1-866-889-8894, our telephone number. Roberta in Santa Fe, New Mexico is on the line. Hey, Roberta, what's up?
Good morning, compañero. I know so many thoughts. You know, as long as somebody holds up the torch of Jefferson like you are doing so well by giving us that hope as well as the problem, I don't think I can leave the land that I love.
Well, thank you. By the way, speaking of Jefferson's torch, my shameless plug department here, my new book, What Would Jefferson Do?, which is the result of having spent 4 years reading Thomas Jefferson's personal correspondences, is shipping right now from Random House, and it should be in bookstores, should be appearing in bookstores any day now. So thanks for giving me an opening to make a plug there.
Some of those books. Yeah, well, thank you, sir. But, you know, the land that I love may be the death of me yet, but I'm going to say, I mean, as I've said before, if I do die in a fascist country, I want my gravestone to say I'd rather be revolting. But anyway, okay. Tom, so many things. I want a chance before I make my main point, which is genocide. That's the purpose for the war, as Cooper mentioned. Anyone who's read William Milton Cooper's book, That Martyr Now, shot by 16 rifles while he was in his wheelchair for writing this book, he did say that the New World Order will create these problems, but they really, their main purpose is genocide. They're thinning the herd. They do not want this overpopulation on the planet.
Oh, wait a second, Roberta. Are you suggesting that there is a plan to... That anybody is in charge of a program to just kind of kill off people because there's too many people?
Well, look at what's happening. Look what's... I mean, in Afghanistan, the indiscriminate killing. And in Latin America, the death squads and everything, of course.
Yeah,
combatants. They're killing women, children, old people.
I understand and I agree with you, but I don't think that it's because somebody sat down and said, "Gee, there's too many people. Let's just start killing them." I mean, you know, why not? Gee, there's too many people. How about promoting birth control?
This happened. Birth control isn't enough, apparently. After Truman dropped the big one, the rulers still were shocked to see that the population had doubled, and there was something we had to do about that. But, you know, birth control, it wasn't enough. It wasn't doing it. But Cooper wrote the book, even exposing the early life of the Pope. I mean, he had to be killed. And he was in his home in a wheelchair, 16 men.
Okay. And so we got 30 seconds here. Your main point?
Okay. My point is, though, that I wanted to say that the reason I mention my jail experience is because I'm still so... could you hold me over? I want to explain the proof of Gandhi's method, how when one experiences it...
Hang on, Roberta. We'll get to that right after the break. It's the Tom Hartman Radio Program, 20 minutes past the hour. Stay tuned.
I guess I better let the dog in.
Like the small dog that rules the house, Small Dog Electronics is the small computer company that really rules when it comes to customer service. Small Dog Electronics is your authorized Apple reseller in Wakefield, Vermont. Sure, you can buy your computer out of a catalog, but how do you know you're really getting what you want or what you need? At Small Dog, they don't work on commission. Their only motivation is making sure you're a happy customer. Put your business on the leading edge with the world's fastest computer, the new Macintosh G5. You'll finish the job ahead of the pack, and automatic security updates block out viruses. That's speed and dependability that will keep you focused on your customers instead of sitting on hold with tech support.
I guess you want to get on the couch, huh?
Like the small dog who everybody makes room for, Small Dog Electronics is big on customer service. Small Dog Electronics. Check them out on the web at smalldog.com. Or at their showroom on Route 100 in Waitsfield.
No way. You're not getting on the bed.
How can contemporary America possibly compare with 1933 Germany? Find out in Tom Hartman's brand new fully illustrated book, We the People, A Call to Take Back America. Through Tom's concise political analysis and Neil Cohn's vibrant illustrations, you'll observe an unsettling, if not shocking, perspective of America. You'll also hear what the founders of this country did to control corporate power. You'll be invited to consider how the American political system can be made more democratic, as well as comprehend the project for the new American century's vision for America. Here's what syndicated cartoonist Ted Rawl said after reading We the People.
An ambitious effort to explain everything that's wrong in America, how things got this way, and what should be done about it. We the People is the product of a brilliant and principled thinker.
We the People, A Call to Take Back America by Tom Hartman. Available in bookstores everywhere.
For more than 27 years, the Progressive magazine In These Times has provided groundbreaking coverage of movements for social, environmental, and economic justice. Author and broadcast personality Studs Terkel calls In These Times his bi-weekly tonic. In These Times features award-winning reporting and analysis of national and international news. Find In These Times on your newsstand or visit us online at www.inthesetimes.com or call 1-800-827-0270. 1-800-827-0270.
Do the Republicans or the Democrats have a clear vision for America that actually includes democracy, fairness, and justice? Do the Greens or the Progressives? How can we create a shared vision of the kind of future we want for our children? This is Tom Hartman, and I'll be exploring these and many other issues with guests from a wide variety of viewpoints, as well as taking your calls.
The Tom Hartman Show, 12 p.m. till 3 p.m. Eastern Standard Time.
Are George Bush's policies getting you down? Have you had enough of Bush's messianic militarism? Does John Ashcroft's assault on the Bill of Rights scare you? Do you believe that Dick Cheney had his conscience surgically removed 3 decades ago? Are you angry at the Iraq fiasco that was the brainchild of Deputy Secretary of Defense Paul out of his Wolfowitz? Well, then subscribe to the Progressive magazine. You'll get the insights of Barbara Ehrenreich, the inspiration of Howard Zinn, and the mirth of Molly Ivins, Will Durst, and Kate Clinton. They'll help you survive this dark age. And check this out. You can subscribe today for only $12 for 12 monthly issues. Simply get on the web and go to www.progressive.org or call 1-800-827-0555 and mention offer radio. That's 1-800-827-0555 and mention the radio offer from the Tom Hartman Program. That's the Progressive. It's your antidote to reactionary policies.
is the Democracy Zone with Tom Hartman.
And welcome back. Tom Hartman with you, 24 minutes past the hour. Lest I not get to it here, I know Roberta wants to go off in a little bit of a different direction here, which we will I'll give her a chance to get to in just a second. But I was talking about the postponing of the elections, and I want to be sure to share this with you. The U.S. Election Assistance Commission, this is this group that is now headed up by this Bush crony, who's talking about postponing the elections this fall, or maybe even just canceling them. They're having a public meeting tomorrow at 1 o'clock in Washington, D.C. It's at 1225 New York Avenue Northwest, Suite 1100. If you want more information about it, go to AmericanProgress.org on the Internet, www.AmericanProgress.org. It's in the Progress Report, which you can see right there on their screen. 1-866-889-8894, our telephone number. Roberta, you wanted to make a point about how Gandhi and Jesus and Martin Luther King's form of pacifism is more effective at transforming the world than George W. Bush's let's bomb them into democracy. Well, am I correct?
Yes, violence breeds violence. And where has it ever worked? One war leads to another. And I'm more concerned that our young people are murdering than I am that they are dying.
Yeah, there's the old saying, the war comes home.
To a Christian. And, you know, this experiment that Gandhi proved is so powerful. It's the only thing that works. And it is the only civil, I mean, it goes all the way back to Socrates, first do no harm. He took the Hippocratic Oath and put it into politics. I mean, it's Gandhi could have gotten it from Socrates, who got it from the ancient Hindus. It's karma. This country has horrible karma. Yeah. And the only way we can right the flag, I mean, there was a woman here in Santa Fe who made a flag all black and white. She called it the haunted flag. Yes, we have a lot to answer for, and we aren't going to do it by killing, murdering, and torturing.
Well said, Roberta. Well said. I absolutely agree with you, and thank you very much for sharing that. Unfortunately, I believe we did have to go to war against Adolf Hitler and Tojo. There's a time for pacifism, and sometimes you have to respond to violence. This is a really tough one. This is a really tough one. And I think for any truly thinking person, and it was a really tough one for the United States. You know, one of the things that most people alive today don't know about and certainly don't remember, I would say probably anybody over 70 remembers it well. But anybody younger than that, anybody who wasn't, you know, of conscious age in the late 30s, early 40s, doesn't remember the fact that there was this huge debate in the United States Congress and in the newspapers. It was played out over several years of the Roosevelt administration about whether or not the United States should intervene in the war in Europe. And there was, the Republican Party was virtually, absolutely united in saying, no way, we should not stop Hitler. Hitler is, you know, let the Europeans deal with him themselves. Rex Stout wrote a brilliant book called The Illustrious Dunderheads. Rex Stout, the guy who invented Nero Wolfe, the famous detective character. And it was just a collection of the speeches, mostly by Republican legislators, saying, no, we don't want to get entangled in a foreign war. I mean, Americans historically have taken the idea of going to war very, very seriously. And it takes a lot to provoke us. We don't start wars, we finish them, has been our traditional. And yeah, you know, the Gulf of Tonkin, we got lied into that one. And look what happened. The result was disastrous. And we got lied into the war in Iraq. And the result may well be equally disastrous. Certainly for over 850 of our soldiers, it has already been. And 16,000 who are wounded. Not to mention the tens of thousands of Iraqi civilians, innocent Iraqi civilians, who have died. Who have died far more than died here in 9/11. This war has been a disaster. It's the Tom Hartman radio program, 29 minutes past the hour.
there's a positive focus on a condition that affects millions. Read The Edison Gene, ADHD and the Gift of the Hunter Child by Tom Hartman, best-selling author of Attention Deficit Disorder, A Different Perception. John Rady, author of User's Guide to the Brain, says this about The Edison Gene.
Once again, with tireless scholarship and a bit of poetry, Tom Hartman helps take us to the edge of knowing ourselves, our brains, and our world.
The Edison Gene, available in bookstores everywhere.
Pop and not-so-pop culture, democracy, and the news of the day. This is the Tom Hartman Program.
You're listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News Service. I'm Jesse Russell.
And I'm Sarah Turner. It's day 12 of an indefinite hunger strike by Gary Nilsson, the president of the Communication Workers of America, Local 1365 in Andover, Massachusetts. Nilsson's union has shrunk from 3,000 to 300 members in 3 years. Nilsson is fasting to get a better financial package for 34 maintenance workers due to be laid off from Lucent Technologies this Friday. The North Shore Labor Council is asking area union workers to show their support by fasting for 24 hours. Nilsson vowed to continue drinking only fruit juice and water until he gets his members the severance package he feels they deserve.
A plan by an iron ore supplier to hire temporary workers during a labor dispute has steel workers fired up. Cleveland Cliffs Incorporated has announced in a letter that if the labor dispute is not resolved by July 31st and a strike does occur, non-regional workers will be used to keep its 4 Minnesota and Michigan mines running. Temporary workers haven't been used during labor disputes in the Iron Range mining industry for more than 30 years. The company says that the demand for taconite pellets is at an all-time high, but inventories are low, and if there is a disruption, it could cause vendors to look elsewhere. The union says the company is just trying to threaten the employees by using a classic union-busting technique.
Lights on Broadway could go dark as early as this week. Contract talks broke down between the Broadway Actors Union, Equity, and theater producers on Saturday. No further talks are scheduled with the producers' trade group, so now Equity is approaching individual producers and on Sunday reached a labor agreement with the producer of The Boy from Oz. This prevents any work stoppage for that musical, though a strike authorization for all other Broadway shows could come as early as this week.
Under a new program, postal workers who are determined to be permanently ill or injured could lose all of the benefits of their union contract. The program, called the Outplacement Initiative, would use government funding to send employees to work for private companies. When placed, the worker will lose union representation, have health benefits switched to the new employers, and their federal pension will be frozen without future earning potential. Currently being tested in Flushing, New York, the Postal Service expects to expand the program throughout the country if successful.
Here's today's Dow Bob Report. America is a land of equal opportunity, right? Well, if someone's lacking health insurance at retirement age, they're 43% more likely to die prematurely than their peers, according to a new study by Health Affairs. The report translates into more than 100,000 preventable deaths for people between the ages of 55 to 64, placing uninsurance as the third most common cause of death for this age group. You've been listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News Service. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
Fearlessly exploring the truth of the day, here's Tom Hartman.
What's wrong with this?
Boy, do we have some pictures that have some problems. Yeah, there's something we're definitely not at all seeing. What happened to the weapons of mass destruction? What happened to the anthrax? What happened to the mushroom cloud? What happened to the chemical weapons? What happened? Now we find that faux news, otherwise known as Fox News, has undertaken a campaign. Now, first of all, this new movie, Outfoxed, premiered in New York, I believe it was, or Washington, D.C. today. And it's a movie in which a bunch of former Fox employees basically lay out how the Fox News Channel, which lost millions and millions of dollars for years and years and years. I mean, people are, oh, that Air America, they're not doing so well, are they? Well, they've been on the air for, what, 2 months? Fox lost money for years. And how they have, they're unabashedly a propaganda vehicle. Not just for the Republican Party, but for the conservative agenda. I'm telling you, if the Republicans were to repudiate the conservative agenda and go back to being the party of Dwight Eisenhower, Fox News would dump the Republicans too. And they'd start backing the libertarians or something. In my opinion. But here, just a few of these quotes. I mean, this is, you know, so-called reporters missing completely. I mean, here, in order to provide a little balance, this, by the way, our daily propaganda alert.
Propaganda, propaganda. If you want to fool the folks, it comes in handy.
Yeah.
If you want to tell some lies, pull the wool over their eyes, you can do it with propaganda.
So, Carl Cameron on 62904 on books on Fox News. Kerry is both under fire from minority leaders who say he's not reached out enough and eager to shed the image of an elitist millionaire. Like George W. Bush wasn't born with millions. Like, you know, Dick Cheney is worth millions more than John Edwards. And does that get discussed? No. Here, Fox anchorman Britt Hume. Finally, he may be a Boston aristocrat with an Ivy League education and cousins in France. That said on April 6th of this year. Fox correspondence. Fox correspondent Carl Cameron criticized as aloof and out of touch with the common man. The millionaire Massachusetts senator met with low-income African-American kids. Can you imagine? Can you just imagine if on the CBS Evening News, Dan Rather was to say, millionaire President George W. Bush and multimillionaire President Dick Cheney met today with Joe Blow, you know, whoever. Can you imagine? Would you, you know, people would just go, huh? Well, yeah, they're millionaires, but I mean, blue suit wearing, I mean, it's, what's the, it's irrelevant. At least in that context. Here again, Carl Cameron, another Fox reporter. This here's two quotes. The first one is from June 29th of this year, just last month. June reports from a Fox correspondent says, quote, Kerry has always been one of the haves, educated at the finest schools, and a billionaire wife. Always been one of the haves. He went to the same school as George W. They both went to Yale. They're both in Skull and Bones. I mean, this causes a lot of people to be to actually say, wait a minute. I mean, George W. went to Andover, one of the most expensive and exclusive prep schools in the world, where he was a cheerleader. No, seriously. Extracurricular activity. Cheerleader. And then again, Carl Cameron on Fox on July 3rd. The problem for Kerry may be who he is, an Ivy League millionaire who has rubbed elbows with the world's wealthiest sophisticates, while most of rural America is considered Bush country. You get it? There's no mention at all in either of these reports of the fact that Kerry's opponent, George W. Bush, is the grandson of a senator and a multimillionaire. The son of a president and a multimillionaire. Went to school at Phillips Andover, Yale, Harvard. Has tens of millions of dollars in personal assets. A good chunk of which, by the way, came from the Bin Laden family. Here, Fox News anchor David Asman. Or is it Asman? I'm not sure. No pun intended there. December 2nd, 02. Now, some people say John Kerry did, first of all, because he's an attractive candidate, but he also got a lot of money. He married into a lot of money. These guys, Donald Trump, John Kerry, millionaires many hundreds of times over, gives you the idea that this whole political thing is kind of elitist. No mention of George Bush, the multimillionaire, Dick Cheney, the multimillionaire. I mean, even implying Fox correspondent Brian Wilson in February of this year, February 18th, suggesting that these guys, they don't even eat like the rest of us. These guys specifically, Kerry and Edwards. He says, this is not to suggest that there's anything wrong with making or marrying into millions, but it is fair to point out that it's probably been a long time since either of these guys had to dine on Hamburger Helper. Yeah. True of George W. and Dick, too. I thought that John Edwards' wife last night on 60 Minutes made a great point. She said, yeah. I'm paraphrasing from memory here. Something to the effect of, yes, her husband, John Edwards, and his running mate, John Kerry, are wealthy guys, as are Dick Cheney and George W. Bush. But she pointed out that John Kerry and John Edwards both voted against a tax cut that would have put more money in their pockets. And she pointed out that's really the definition of courage, of moral certitude, of belief in your own principles, when you will take a stand and cast a vote that works against your own financial interest, your own narrow, selfish financial interest, because it's the best thing for the nation. There's a concept that I don't think is well understood by many cons. Bush, who lives, he's got this huge former pig farm down there in Texas. They call it the Bush Ranch. I think it should more appropriately be called the Bush Estate. It's worth millions. And then the Bush family compound in Kennebunkport and the Bush family mansions in Connecticut, worth tens of millions. But rather than discussing that, Fox News, Brian Wilson's special report on the Kerry and Edwards homes on February 18th of this year, quote, just a few cobblestones away, about a block actually, is where John Kerry lives in Washington. A four-story house, about 104 years old, 23 rooms, 10 bedrooms, 6 baths, 7 fireplaces. Count them, 7 fireplaces. Conservative estimate on value, $4.3 million. You may notice I said this is where Senator Kerry lives, but technically it belongs to his fabulously wealthy wife and ketchup heiress, Teresa Hines. Senator Edwards' home is $3.8 million. Well, gee, Brian Wilson, that was real important for me to know. Why not also tell us about Cheney's tens of millions and how he got them? Doing business as the head of Halliburton, bribing Nigerian officials, doing $78 million in business with Saddam Hussein in 1998 and 99. Doing business with Iran, with Libya. While Bill Clinton, as president, is saying, hey, it's illegal for American corporations to do this. Dick Cheney was doing it. You're not going to find a mention about that on faux news. Carl Cameron, again, 7304. Without mentioning Edwards' more than 5 years in the Senate, or the fact that his counterpart, Dick Cheney's Halliburton treasurer, makes him wealthier than Edwards, Fox reported, quote, topping Kerry's shortlist is a millionaire trial lawyer from the South. An earlier report had a Fox correspondent saying, don't worry about Senator Edwards getting by. He made millions as a trial lawyer. A little class warfare, a little propaganda.
Propaganda, propaganda. If you want to fool the folks, it comes in handy.
Yes, indeed. Our propaganda alert for the day. 15 minutes before the hour. Faux news there. Four of the five Republicans. This is mind-boggling. Four of the five of the Republicans who are investigating Tom DeLay. Now, Tom DeLay is being investigated for illegally raising money and giving it to Republican candidates. And you got that? I mean, he's being investigated for corruption. And these are serious charges. I mean, he's hired a trial lawyer. Oh, my God, he's hired a trial lawyer. Well, George W. did, too, of course, when they were looking into his association with the Valerie Plame affair. Anyhow, Tom DeLay is being charged with corruption. And so the House of Representatives has decided that they should look into this. Right. I mean, you know, the House has the ability to check out the ethics of its members. So Tom DeLay, as leader of the House of Representatives, House Majority Leader, no doubt had some say in who got to investigate him. And surprise, surprise, four of the five Republicans investigating an ethics complaint. This is from the Associated Press, my friends. This is, you know, please. This is not the wild-eyed left media. This is just straight news. Today's AP. Four of the five Republicans investigating an ethics complaint against House Majority Leader Tom DeLay have received campaign contributions from DeLay's Political Action Committee, records show. The contributions were all delivered before the Ethics Committee received the DeLay complaint on June 15th. This all started because Representative Chris Bell of Houston has claimed that the DeLay campaign illegally solicited, I'm reading this from the Associated Press, has claimed DeLay illegally solicited campaign contributions in return for legislative favors and laundered illegal corporate contributions for use in Texas elections. Laundered illegal contributions, corporate contributions for use in Texas. I mean, this, do you remember the old, I just have to share this law with you. This, I'm going to read it to you very quickly. This was a Wisconsin law. This, it's a section 4479A, section 1, chapter 492, law passed in Wisconsin in 1905. Similar laws were passed all across the United States. Pennsylvania's, for example, was passed in 1784, 1815 in Massachusetts. All of these laws were repealed in the era starting in the late 1880s. This one actually was not repealed until 1954. But this is how it used to be in the United States when statesmen and women ruled the nation. I am reading from an actual law that was a model law. Pretty much every state in the union had a similar law. No corporation doing business in this state shall pay or contribute or offer consent or agree to pay or contribute directly or indirectly any money, property, free service of its officers or employees, or thing of value to any political party, organization, committee, or individual for any political purpose whatsoever, or for the purpose of influencing legislation of any kind, or to promote or defeat the candidacy of any person for nomination, appointment, or election to any political office. Penalty.
An officer, employee, agent, or attorney, or other representative of any corporation acting for and in behalf of such corporation who shall violate this act shall be punished by imprisonment in the state prison for a period of not less than 1 or more than 5 years, or by both fine and imprisonment. If a domestic corporation, it may be dissolved. If a foreign or non-resident corporation, its right to do business in this state is declared forfeit. But Tom DeLay is laundering corporate money in Texas, and now it turns out 4 of the 5 guys investigating him were recipients of that money. Well, isn't that sweet? 10 minutes before the hour, Tom Hartman with you.
Are you frustrated by your constant inability to lose weight? Are you looking for a natural, clinically proven weight loss breakthrough? Introducing CarboBlocker. Unlike anything else on the market, CarboBlocker is backed by clinical research that proves it effectively helps block the fattening effects of carbs without stimulants. Your body will think you're eating a low-carb diet even when you're not. The results are simply amazing. If you want to maintain the weight loss effects of low-carb dieting for the long run, if you're tired of clothes that are too tight and you want to look fit and sexy, then CarboBlocker is for you. It's clinically effective. Formula is safe, natural, and stimulant-free. And as a special introductory offer, when you order 2 bottles of Carbo Blocker, you'll get 2 bottles of Appetite Blocker absolutely free. Call in the next 10 minutes, and you'll also receive 2 free books, Lose Fat Now and the Low Carb Cookbook, a $100 value, absolutely free. So call now, 1-800-743-5704. Guaranteed to work or your money back, so call now, 1-800-743-5704. That's 1-800-743-5704.
The Founding Fathers thought they'd stop corporations from ever overthrowing elected government. Little did they know that 200 years later, democracy would be stolen and twisted in the name of so-called conservative values. Hi, this is Tom Hartman. The Founders of America fought the Revolutionary War against the excessive corporate power of the East India Company, and presidents from Jefferson to Eisenhower warned us that extremely big businesses could destroy democracy. You'll find this extraordinary American story in my book, Unequal Protection: The Rise of Corporate Dominance and the Theft of Human Rights. It starts with the Boston Tea Party and ends with the rampant corruption of the Bush administration. It tells the dramatic story of how corporations hijacked the Bill of Rights, setting the stage for the CEO takeover of America. And it shows how we can take America back, and tells the stories of Americans from Pennsylvania to California who are doing just that right now.
Unequal Protection is available in bookstores nationwide, and you can read several chapters online at unequalprotection.com. That's Unequal Protection by Tom Hartman.
Are you or a loved one making too many trips to the bathroom? Listen closely, because you're not alone. Over 30 million men suffer from an enlarged prostate. That's why if you make frequent trips to the bathroom, have urgency, hesitancy, or a diminished sex drive, then Super Prostate Formula is for you. It was designed by nationally recognized physician Dr. Michael Toplitzky. The results with his patients have been amazing. Reclaim control now and join the thousands of satisfied customers who have had incredible results with Super Prostate Formula. When you order 2 bottles of Dr. Toplitzky's Super Prostate Formula, you'll also get 2 bottles of his Super Libido Formula, an all-natural alternative to Viagra to enhance sexual vitality and performance, plus his book, Complete Guide to Prostate Health, and his newsletter, a total $100 value, free as your gift. Guaranteed or your money back. If you're not completely satisfied, return it for a full refund and keep his Libido Formula book and newsletter free as your gift. Not available in stores. Call now, 800-452-0978. 800-452-0978. That's 800-452-0978.
With the Workers' Independent News Service, I'm Sarah Turner, bringing you today's feature story. In June, more than 400 people in Southern California were rounded up by Border Patrol agents and deported to Mexico. The raids had a chilling effect throughout the state's immigrant communities. Vinny Lombardo files this report.
Each day, hundreds gathered in the early morning and marched for 10 miles along the frontage roads of U.S. Highway 101, stopping to rally when workers were spotted in the nearby fields.
Workers that have been working in these fields haven't had raises in 10 years. And why did they give them a raise 10 years ago? Because the union was here organizing.
Castellanos points out that nearly 80% of California farm workers are undocumented. This leads to farm workers and other Latinos being questioned or arrested because of their skin color. U.S. Congressman Sam Farr disagrees. He says the rumors of Border Patrol raids are baseless.
The enforcement would be looking for a specific individual by name and not profiling people by race.
Efren Barajas is vice president of the UFW.
The communities are afraid. They hear about the migra being around. So these marches are serving the purpose of taking care of that concern.
In January, President Bush drafted a new program that would grant temporary legal status to undocumented workers if he or she finds a willing employer. The temporary visas expire after 3 years. If the employment ends early, the person must leave the U.S. Senate Bill 1645, aka the Ag Jobs Bill, would allow undocumented workers to permanently stay in the U.S. by continuing to work in agriculture. Yadira Ramirez has had family members deported to Mexico in the past.
We are not pieces of trash that you can just trash around and work like machinery.
The Ag Jobs Bill is expected to come up for a vote in the Senate later this week. In Santa Cruz, California, I'm Vinny Lombardo for the Workers Independent News Service.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
I know it's my duty to spend and to buy, to prove to Bin Laden I'll shop till I die. I'm a world-class consumer, I'm sure of my role. I vote with my dollars for corporate control.
And welcome back. Tom Hartman here, 4.5 minutes before the hour. Isn't this amazing? Tom DeLay is being investigated for illegally gathering together corporate money and passing it off to politicians. And four of the five politicians who are investigating him are recipients of the money. Not only that, the ethics panel meetings, this is according to the Associated Press, the ethics panel meetings are closed to the public and investigations are rarely acknowledged. All participants, from the 10 representatives to the newest clerk, must swear to reveal nothing confidential. DeLay is his party's most prolific fundraiser in the House's Political Action Committee. Americans for a Republican Majority has raised almost $2.7 million during this election cycle, spreading $623,000 among 75 House candidates, many of them incumbents. Now, the consequence of this one-man rule, this Stalinistic form of governance that Tom DeLay advocates, is that they change the rules whenever they feel like it. Normally, you have a vote in the House of Representatives, you have the vote, it's over. That's not what happened last week, and this is what Bernie Sanders thought.
From Vermont. Thank you, Mr. Speaker, and let me begin by thanking the 191 Democrats and 18 Republicans who voted for that important amendment. But I'm not going to discuss the substance of that amendment because that debate took place. And I respect the people on both sides of that debate. But what I do not respect is that when we are having a debate about basic American democratic rights and what our Constitution is supposed to be, I resent bitterly on behalf of the American people that the Republican leadership rigged the game.
The Republican leadership being Tom DeLay.
That's wrong. At the end of 9 innings of a baseball game, the team that has the most runs wins.
And he had the most votes. He won the vote, and Tom DeLay said, okay, we're going to keep the vote open. And this was a vote on an amendment that Bernie Sanders had put forward to roll back the Patriot Act provisions about libraries. It's absolutely amazing. It's Tom DeLay is running the House like Stalin ran the Politburo. It's been the Tom Hartman Program. This is Tom Hartman here with you. Thank you for joining us today. Thanks to Louise for producing our program. Thanks to Rama for showing up and engineering a show. Thanks to Shelby for streaming us around the planet. Thanks to Brad Walrod for our music. Thanks to our sponsors, particularly Small Dog Electronics, smalldog.com on the web. Thanks to Mike Toth and Ben for our archives. Thanks to the folks in our chat room. Thanks to Jay for performing and writing our theme music. And thanks to you for showing up. See you tomorrow.
You've been listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information.
While the world seems to be collapsing around us, there is hope. Tom Hartman's inspiring book, The Last Hours of Ancient Sunlight, The Fate of the World and What We Can Do Before It's Too Late, has just been re-released. The new updated version is available now and offers solutions to the issues that concern us most: eco-damage, genetic engineering, virulent disease, the end of cheap oil, water shortages, global famine, wars. We can still do something about it and create a world that will work for us and our children's children. As the inspiration for